Good evening, everyone. It's 6 o'clock, so we'll have to get started. Have you all got your agenda paper? Thank you. First on the agenda is apologies for absence.
Apologies have been received from Councillors Maud, Windrus and Hicks. Councillor Wainwright will substitute for Councillor Maud. Councillor Arnold will substitute for Councillor Windrus. Thank you.
Thank you. Item two on your agenda is declarations of interest. Members. Shall we go around? Steve. Yeah,
I've been lobbied on all things.
Eric.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I've been lobbied on all of them. Can I just make a point? To anybody who is lobbying, there's no need to send it by recorded delivery. I had to go 3 times to the post office to get that. And if you send it to Rydale House, it does get to me eventually. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, the same. I've been lobbied on both sides.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I've been lobbied on both sides. And on item five, I've got a personal interest, but it's non-prejudicial. Thank you.
Councillor Woodward.
Lobbied, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, on item four, my nephew and family use Malton Market at the moment, so that's a personal and not prejudicial interest. And I am a farmer elected member on the board of the Vale of Pickering Drainage Board. That too is a personal and not prejudicial interest.
And I've been lobbied on all four of these from both sides, so... item three, schedule of items to be determined by the committee. And we'll go straight on to item four, I think, Gary. So item four on your agendas, page three.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, we've just got a bit of trouble in the audience there with the I think Councillor Keel needs a seat, I think. So there are probably one or two more chairs next door if we want to just get a few in just before we start. It's just a thought. Yeah. So just take a minute and just get a couple of three chairs in. I see there's two or three people standing at the back there. I think you'll find when we really start, I'll speak a lot louder. Thank you.
So if everyone could speak directly into their microphones so that the people in the public gallery can hear what is being said. Thank you.
Right, thank you, Chairman. We'll proceed on, and I'd like to start by thanking everybody for coming to an extraordinary meeting of the Planning Committee in the middle of August. It wasn't our deliberate intention to pick one on what's conventionally the holiday month, but I'm afraid the timing of the application necessitated us meeting today in between normal committee meetings. I'd also crave your indulgences, as you probably picked up from some of the committee reports, that we've been still waiting for some consultee responses and appraisals to come through, which I'll update you with as we go along. So starting first with application item number four, which is at Eden House Road. In addition to the items that you have on their agenda papers and the late pages, you'll see, perhaps be aware that we've continued to have some third-party responses, one of which is a further letter of support from a member of the farming community who raises similar issues of support to those raised in the agenda item. We have, however, also received yesterday a more detailed letter of objection from a company called Keo Planning on behalf of Harrison, David Harrison Developments, who are the developer at York Road, which is the expansion area to York Road Industrial Estate as you're going out of the town in the York direction. And I'll summarise, as you'll appreciate, we've had the application since the 29th of April and we got the letter yesterday. So, unfortunately, this isn't with your agenda papers. But in essence, the objection centres around the fact that they, or David Harrison Limited, for, has not so long ago secured a permission for a combination of a B1, B2 and B8 use. And that was granted, I think, in around about 2011, and it's taken its time getting off the ground. The letter does go on to say that despite those difficult circumstances, his client has managed to secure several occupiers for the new employment land there, and at present, just a little less than 5 hectares remain undeveloped. They also refer to a permission which members may recall on the front part portion of that site, which was actually a detailed permission to the Ginger Pig. And members will be aware that Ginger Pig have a part proposal on the application site tonight, which is obviously something they wish members to be aware of. They also point out that the proposal that they obtained planning permission for was for wholly B1, B2 and B8 uses, which are, for those in the audience who aren't familiar, which are light industrial offices, general industrial and warehousing. Whereas the proposals tonight that you're considering at Eden House Road do in part involve some elements of A1, A2 and A3 uses, which are ordinarily the sort of uses that, that are often found in town centres or in edge of centre locations. And I'll come back to that later when I do the presentation. In essence, they are concerned that in some respects, that by dealing with this application tonight, it would be treating the applicants at Eden House differently to the how they were treated. I would stress, however, the application at York Road was applied for business uses, and that's what it got its permission for. In terms of the undeveloped area down at York Road, yes, clearly there are parts of that site that have yet to either be developed or obtain a detailed planning permission, because there was an outline planning permission on that site also. However, in the context of where we are now, the council's plan has moved on, and as members will be aware, we have an adopted plan as of September last year, which actually now seeks to allocate up to 45 hectares of employment land in the district, and 80% of that is earmarked for the Moulton and Norton area, either at or on the outskirts of the town. So in global policy terms, I would suggest to you, Chairman, that yes, there might be some undeveloped areas, but actually we need to be developing ahead and thinking ahead for further commercial premises at the principal town. So I won't say anything more about that, Chairman, other than just to say we got that letter very late. It isn't particularly addressed in the report because nobody else had raised those particular issues. It does, however, lead me on to a point that it procedurally, we are required with this application at Eden House to refer the matter on to the Secretary of State if we are minded to grant planning permission tonight. That's not because we potentially think there's anything procedurally averse with the application, but it is a requirement of the procedure, the consultation procedures, because of the size and amount of the development that we do refer it. So if we're minded to approve it, then that is a procedural requirement that is necessary. Now, just coming back to the point that I just mentioned in relation to the A1, A2 and also the B1 uses, if members can turn to the first plan, and I'm looking for the page now. It's easier to show this on the layout plan, Chairman. On page 24, and although that's quite small scale on your iPads, if you slightly enlarge it, you probably can pick up the fact that that's showing at Eden House the three parcels of land that the report describes. So the southern parcel underneath the overhead lines to orient yourself is the proposed area for the large attenuation pond. to the western side of the Eden House Road is the proposed livestock market site and proposed associated agribusinesses, which are what I can only describe as a series of hybrid uses, which would within them contain, in use class terms, some A1 retail, some A2 offices, some A3 uses. For example, a cafe on the site would be an A3 use. So all of those things are, on the face of it, potentially uses that you might expect to see in a town centre, but are clearly bespoke to the site. And in addition, in respect of the eastern site and all of, well, in fact, part of the western site as well, is a proposal which shows a more conventional business park of B1, B2 and B8 uses. Now, the transport assessment that accompanied the outline was based on a maximum of 4,000 square metres of office accommodation. So, in fact, there is an extra condition suggested limiting it to that use. But because of the totality of those A1, A2, A3 and B1 business uses, it requires the referral, Chairman. So it's a procedural requirement. It actually forms a smaller part of the overall amount of floor space that's proposed, but it does require us to, I suppose, as a council, address whether or not we think it's an appropriate location for those types and mixes of uses. So there's a sort of a sequential approach that you need to apply to this, as you might have done to a supermarket, Chairman. So if we'd had a supermarket out there, we'd be looking at the town centre, edge of centre and the like. Clearly, this is very different to that. And as you've seen from the late pages, that we are proposing quite significant restrictions on the amounts of those types of uses with the conditions on the suggested planning permission. In addition, I think it's the MPPF requires us to contemplate whether we apply a sequential test to those types of uses, but the MPPF does require us to demonstrate sort of flexibility on those issues, and that's set out in paragraphs 24, 25 and 26. And whilst clearly Eden Camp is out of town centre, it clearly is a situation where our local plan strategy, which seeks to relocate a livestock market, doesn't have any sequential direction to it. It seeks to just provide the livestock market in a location which is well served by roads, doesn't have a large, is in a sustainable location, but doesn't have major issues with regard to traffic, for example. And clearly that doesn't require a town centre location. It's our view as officers that the agribusiness centre is inextricably linked to that. So locationally, we think it's a sensible location. You can't treat the two separately. In terms of the business park, as I've described it, which is primarily the eastern half of the site, which is nearer to the A169, well, your local plan, as I've mentioned earlier, does identify, at least in the first period, nearly 30 hectares of industrial land at Moulton and Norton, within, adjacent to, or on the outskirts of the towns. And we certainly feel that this suits that description. In addition, the employment land review that we've had carried out in 2006, and that was reviewed again in 2010, clearly identified that in that document, which is one of our evidence-based documents for the local plan, that this would be a suitable site for employment uses, and certainly was one of the best potential sites for a higher quality employment development. So in all, Chairman, we think that locationally the sites are sequentially acceptable. In terms of impact on the town centre, well, when you total up all the potential retail uses, for example, and net that down, it's probably less than 900 square metres of net retail for particular types of retailing, as you'll have seen from the planning conditions. And it's clear that that will not have any adverse impact on the town centre. All in all, against that background, we don't consider as officers that this application would have any adverse impact on the vitality or viability of the town centre. It sort of underlies some of the criticism that came in the letter yesterday, which I think we felt that we needed to address, Chairman, because we didn't want you to make the decision tonight in the absence of that. Okay. What I'd like to do at this stage is just show members, if I can find them. This obviously, we've trailed this application in June with the planning committee, and we had a site inspection. I'm not sure how many members who are here tonight managed to get on to the visit. most of the sites are actually readily visible from the highway, so I guess if you haven't weren't on the visit, you've probably taken the opportunity to look. The first of these photos is taken from the flyover that goes across the A64 going back up into Rainbow Lane, if you can picture where you are. So this view is looking eastwards towards the grade separated junction at the A169, which is just off picture. So you're looking over here, the pylons are a good guide, and this screening here is actually screening Eden Camp. You can just see the tower there. So the site is actually just in the distance in this area here. Okay. This is a view closer to the junction with the Wise House Lane. So this is the A169 heading towards Pickering, the Minor Road Junction, and the existing junction into Eden House Road. So that's where you'd turn if you were going to Eden Camp, coming from the Moulton direction. At this point, arising from the transport assessment, there is a proposed roundabout. And clearly that's quite a significant feature. Members who were probably here a few years ago probably remember the Northminster development, which actually was still proposing to use the right-hand turn without a roundabout. Because of the change in traffic appraisals and accident records and things like that over the years, it's now requiring a roundabout to get in to the site safely. That has beneficial effects for everybody else using that junction, I have to say, because if you've ever parked there trying to turn right coming out, you'll appreciate the speed of vehicles coming from the A64 direction. This is a view, and the next one or two views are just a view of the southern site heading facing towards Eden Camp. So this is the screening from the A64. So if you're coming off the slip road behind that screening, you're sort of coming to the old Moulton roundabout here, and here is the existing footway, which is potentially to be enhanced to improve cycleway arrangements. So as we pan round, as I'm sure most members will be familiar with the open space, in this area, in between the pylons, will be quite a substantial surface water attenuation facility. But actually, that facility means that that area can't be developed, so it sort of keeps the front of house open to Eden Camp. And panning across, you're then looking at what I would call the eastern half of the site. Okay, and that row of planting here, which is a plantation about 9 to 10 metres high now, carries all the way along the northern boundary of the site. So if you're heading from the Pickering direction, it's really particularly well screened looking back the other way. This is looking back again. Now this view is taken towards the western site, from the northern end of the western site, looking back, and that's the Russell's Farm Machinery Building in the distance. So you just orient yourself on that. Again, quite good screening on the periphery of the boundaries. And this is the other side of the Eden House Road, looking back at the eastern part of the site, the eastern site. And this is that bank of landscaping I showed you, so it virtually completely obscures anything behind it. So these are more views of the eastern site. Again, another farm building in the background there. So it's not, you know, there are some buildings in this area of the eastern site which are comprised mainly of other farm buildings, Russell's Farm Machinery Buildings and Eden Camp. So these are just views through. And this is a view back down Eden House Road towards the bend where the access into that site would be. This is that bank of trees on the eastern site, which I just referred to. So you're at the back of the eastern site here. The A169 is in the distance behind that hedgerow, so you can see how high that screen is. And this is panning round. This view is the minor, I'll call it a road, but it's a bridleway, adjacent to this is the car park of Eden Camp. There's a gas reduction station just in this area here, just off screen. And this is the hedge road boundary to the southern side of the western site. And this is within the site, just panning around. So as you can see, it's flat, but with some well-established existing hedgerow screening. And this will be a site that you probably most of you be familiar with. This is at the entrance towards Russell's and Eden Camps, just off screen here. And this is the view looking back out the other way from the junction. And you can just see the site notice post there. That's where the entrance to the site would be, to the vehicular entrance. And this is panning round back towards the A169 junction. And as I say, there would be a roundabout in this area here, together with widening of Eden House Road. And that's the view back the other way. Sorry, not too far. So I hope for members that does give you more of an idea of how the site sits in the landscape. Clearly there are views dependent on where you're standing. If you're standing at the 169 roundabout with the A64, then you're looking down over the site. But on other sites, when you're at grade, there are certainly well-screened elevations. As you'll see from the layout plan, if you've all still got it on your screen there, the scheme does propose quite substantial additional what I'll call structural landscaping adjacent to the boundary with the 169. So that's in essence what we've been asked to consider tonight, Chairman. The last thing I would mention to member on the late pages, you'll see the list of conditions, and I'm just looking for those now. And there are a couple of three additional conditions, Chairman, which I'll just point out for you. One of which was confirmation of the limitation of the office floor space to no more than 4,000 square metres, Chairman. And also, Natural England, as you've probably picked up from all of the reports, originally were expressing some concerns, but following receipt of additional information, have confirmed that they have no objection, subject to a commitment to implementing sustainable drainage schemes for each of the developments that we're considering tonight. But they are happy for that to be dealt with at reserve matters stage. And there is a further requirement from your countryside management officer that a condition requiring the detail of the habitat creation areas to be agreed. So there is a commitment to that, but he just wants some more detail and a commitment to it in a condition. So with that aside, Chairman, I think I've probably spoken enough on this first item. Apologies, but we did have quite a lot of updates. Yes, thank you.
We have four speakers for this item. The first of which is Councillor Paul Andrews, District Councillor for this area, if you'd like to take your seat. And just to say, speakers have 3 minutes to speak, and there will be an audible warning after 2.5 minutes. Thank you.
Yes, Chairman, I'm speaking in support of local residents in Old Morton. Chairman, I've always favoured the relocation of the livestock market, but this is the most controversial site they could possibly have chosen. And there just is not the infrastructure in place or planned to accommodate the accompanying so-called enabling development. Other sites which are less controversial have been drawn to their attention, but unfortunately the livestock market operators and Fitzwilliam Trust have chosen to hold the town to ransom by telling everybody that unless the Trust can have the so-called enabling development, the livestock market will cease to exist. This is unacceptable, Chairman. Residents, Chairman, are understandably afraid that these proposals will make their land far more prone to flooding than it already is. I've sent members a copy of a drainage report. Paragraph 11, stop 1 of this states, before further development is considered or even approved, the sewerage network must be analytically modelled to determine the impact of any potential development and the cost of the appropriate improvements fully assessed as a whole and not piecemeal to ensure that the sewerage network can sustain the level of development being considered. It is understood that this has not been done. When this was brought before the inspector at the local plans inquiry, he said it would be done as part of the site's assessment procedure. He said that the overall drainage would be done as part of the site's assessment procedure, but it has not been done. Indeed, the reaction of the various statutory authorities to the flooding of Old Moreton in November 2012 was to indicate that no money would be spent on additional pumps at Lascelles Lane, but that reliance would be had to mobile motorised pumps if and when they were available. So, for example, if Hull floods at the same time as Old Moreton, the pumps will go to Hull and Old Moreton will be allowed to drown. I appreciate, Chairman, that a detention reservoir has been agreed and that Yorkshire Water are satisfied with it. However, residents are not, and I've pointed out the reasons in the documents I've sent out to members. And in any event, the detention reservoir is not designed to improve land drainage at Old Moreton. It is simply to keep things as they are. What I cannot understand is why the applicants could not have been required to provide the kind of pumping station which is in operation at Priorpot in Norton, and perhaps members could give consideration to imposing such a requirement if they decide to grant planning permission tonight, which I hope they won't. Finally, I would remind members that a site selection process is going on and it is possible to refuse consent as there is no requirement to have a 5-year supply of employment land. The bypass could be used as a hard edge for a development limit for Moreton. If planning permission is granted, this will prejudice the further consideration of the Moreton development limits. That hard edge will lose its status. And that in itself, I would suggest, could be sufficient ground for refusal. I ask members to refuse this application. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Next we have a supporter for this, Derek Watson, if you would like to come down and take a seat.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the Planning Committee. My name is Derek Watson. I'm a farmer at West Knapton. I'm also a director of the new company with seven other people that we've formed to look at building a new market for Moreton. My family are also owners of Cundles in Moreton, who are 50% partners in the present livestock market. The present livestock market closed when Foot and Mouth was on at the beginning of this decade and reopened, and over the last 10 or 12 years has gone from strength to strength. Not only is it profitable, but it is one of the largest markets for sheep in the northeast of England, and it has proved very successful to market specialist finished cattle to people from outside the area who are bringing money into this area. It is important that Moreton retains a viable livestock market, and I ask you tonight to support this application. We have the chance now to build a new market which will support and enhance the future of Rydale's livestock farmers. It will bring more footfall into Moreton. It will help the shops, the banks, the accountants, the solicitors. The whole town will benefit from this market. It will expand and we will see more people coming to it, more farmers, more buyers, more money into the area. Yes, it is linked with the cross-subsidy from the other sites that are in front of you tonight. But by building more houses in Moreton, there is more jobs available in Moreton. You're going to need more housing. We are short in Rydale. And it will make Moreton the capital of Rydale. The Fitzwilliam family say it's the food capital of Rydale. They're making Moreton a foodie place. So let's keep the second link in the chain. The farmer produces the animal. Let's give him somewhere to market it. The agribusiness centres that are near it already have national and local people wanting sites. They have the colleges wanting to build a new college there. We have people like the Ginger Pig already committed to these sites. I beg you tonight to support this application. If you look at the other towns in Rydale, Hemsley's a successful tourist town with a castle. Pickering is very successful with a steam railway. Let's make Moreton even more successful with a new cattle market.
30 seconds.
So the capital of Rydale will get even more capital into the town if it has a cattle market. I ask you to support this planning application tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have an objector, Annie Jones.
Hi. My name's Annie Jones.
Could you put the microphone on, please? Sorry.
Yeah, My name's Annie Jones. I'm actually here representing the residents of Old Malton. And I think we have three concerns. That of flooding, that of traffic, and that of the use of a greenfield site. We also feel that this, any decision made on this site may be made prematurely if the Planning Committee are not in possession of the North Yorkshire County Council flooding report. And my belief is, to date, that is still not with the council. Possession of that report would enable the council, under a section 106, to potentially identify shortcomings and problems in the current system. And this development could be used to mitigate against those. So maybe any decision tonight is premature and potentially ill-informed. The second comment is obviously there will be a very, very large increase in traffic with environmental and safety issues for the residents of the village. And again, one comment would be that if this development goes ahead, that traffic cameras or speed restrictions are placed along Town Street. The third comment is there are a number of brownfield sites that have been identified in the local plan. And this is use of nearly 44 acres of prime agricultural land. So to recap on what I've said, we have three concerns. Flooding, we have houses in the village that are unable currently to obtain insurance. And it's not just flooding of houses, it's sewage that comes into houses. The drainage report on the development on Westgate by the Vale of Pickering Internal Drainage Board actually highlights all of our concerns.
Sorry, we are just discussing the cattle market.
No, I'm just using this to point, that's fine. The concerns on that were not raised
30 seconds.
On the letter dated the same date to the council on this, and those are concerns about the capacity of the drains to cope with current water. And as I say, that's our three concerns: drainage, traffic, and use of greenfield. Thank you very much, Chairman, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Charles Vivian, sir, you're the agent for this. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm speaking on behalf of Commercial Development Projects. CDP are part of the Marshall Group of Companies, which has been around since 1901. It's family-owned and financially secure, and they're well-respected in the development and construction world. CDP has an established reputation for delivering business and industrial parks and for taking a longer-term approach to development than many other companies. It is this approach and experience why the Fitzwilliam Trust Corporation chose CDP as its development partner for the next 15 years. From the outset, both CDP and Fitzwilliam Trust Corporation were aligned in our thinking that the saving of the livestock market was critical to Malton and Rydale's social and economic success going forward. We believe that the Eden Camp was the ideal location, and a successful relocation of the livestock market was obviously not only necessary to enable it to survive, but could be the key catalyst to kickstart a new and exciting agricultural business park, creating up to 800 new jobs and saving some existing ones. We initially outlined these proposals to Rydale Council, and they confirmed in principle these aims and the proposal for new housing complied with the local plan strategy. We outlined our plans at the public exhibition in Malton Town Centre in December and explained the need for the cross-subsidy from the residential sites. We were very pleased we received 93% positive support of those people who responded. The main concerns were not surprisingly regarding flooding and traffic. We carried out further consultation with all the statutory authorities such as Yorkshire Water, the Drainage Board, the Environment Agency, Highways Agency, and we carried out a further public consultation in Old Malton. including two presentations to Moulton Town Council, to update residents on our plans and how we propose to respond to these concerns. We are pleased to receive the in-principle support of Moulton Town Council to our proposals following these two events, as well as many letters of support from the public commenting on the planning application. We've also had the public support from Broadacres Housing Association and Bishop Burton Agricultural College, who are interested in locating an educational facility near the new market. Subject to receiving consent tonight, I can reassure the committee that between CDP, Fitzwilliam Trust and the Livestock Market Company, we have the commitment and the resources to build out the new livestock market and look to be in sight as early as possible in the new year. I would therefore urge you to approve this planning application for the many benefits that I've outlined today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Chairman, I think there probably are some issues there, but I think at this stage, if members have got questions, they may well deal with some of the issues that I've got noted, so maybe this is a good time for questions, Chairman.
Members? Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. Firstly, I didn't attend the site visit. I went independently to all the sites, but because I'm the local member, I do actually know these sites very well. The first thing that I would like to say is that I think that we need to refute the fact that Councillor Andrews has made. No one is being held to ransom. As a committee, as a council, we have to look at every application that is put in front of us. So I would like that quashed immediately. Now, I have four questions that I would like to ask, but I'm not sure whether you want me to ask all my four questions, or if you want me to ask one at a time, or if you want me to ask one and then go around to other members.
No, if you carry on with them, and then we'll go on to next members, if you'd like to ask your question.
Okie dokie. So, obviously, the main concern about this is the impact that it would have on the residents of Old Moulton. And the flooding impact, or the possibilities. And I think we need to be convinced tonight for just not only just the residents of Old Moulton, but for us members on the planning committee, how that is going to be dealt with, and is that going to make it worse, no better? Whatever, we need to be sure in our minds that our residents' concerns have been properly looked at, properly addressed, and we feel confident that we are not, certainly not, going to make Old Moulton any worse if this application does get approved.
Thank you, Chairman. And I think the simple answer to that is that clearly, as members will have deduced from the nature of the reports and looking at that box behind me that's got more technical reports in it than I can shake a stick at, that when you get a detailed application that comes forward potentially out of sync, say, for a local plan strategy, let alone a sites document, that's just the way the development industry is sometimes. You, as a planning committee, you're faced with applications, but in many instances it forces the applicants to be submitting lots of detailed information because they're having to justify the application because of where it's sitting in the development plan process. Clearly we've got a local plan strategy that identifies it in high level terms that Moulton and Norton is the focus for business development, at least 80% of it in the district, either in, at or on the periphery of the town, or on the outskirts of the town is the actual word. And with that in mind, this application has come forward, or this particular application for Eden Camp has come forward with a series of detailed technical reports, which I know are easy to criticise, but in terms of the reports that we've had, they have been scrutinised since April by Yorkshire Water, the Highways Agency, who also have a drainage, you know, radar, as well as the highway safety issue, the County Council, Yorkshire Water, and the local internal drainage board. So all of those bodies, none of us sitting around this table are experts on drainage, but all of those bodies have looked at these reports, had further negotiations, had their discussions, and none of them are saying this application should be refused on drainage, sewerage or flood risk grounds. Okay. Now, you will note from the late pages that there are a series of detailed conditions that are recommended by those technical bodies to make sure that, that there are things that mean that the attenuation measures are delivering what they need to deliver. And if I can picture, sorry, point you towards, I think it's page 5 on the... on the late pages, this is, sorry. Drainage conditions now. Sorry, on the first page. I was looking for the page, it was on the very first page. From pages 3 and 4, you will see that there are detailed requirements relating to surface water drainage. There are detailed requirements relating to... surface water runoff, and the rates that are being proposed there relate to 1.4 litres per second per hectare, which is agricultural runoff rate. And that clearly shows a developer that despite all of the development that they're putting forward, which has got roads and roofs and hard surfaces, that actually they're then attenuating that back to a greenfield rate. So that is not going to make any existing situation any worse.
Thank you for that. My second concern is about the new roundabout and the traffic flow, etc., etc. Is this application, is the roundabout going to be an integral part? There's no way that something could happen and the roundabout won't get built or something like that. This application must have that roundabout to ease that traffic flow, especially because the traffic is very, very busy on that Pickering Road. So I just need assurance, first of all, that that is absolutely in concrete, that we are going to... In concrete. Did you like that? That we are going to get that roundabout. And also, sorry, Gary, that obviously that then leads on to the traffic flow, obviously, into Old Malton, which... You know, we are hoping that, I mean, obviously, if it gets passed tonight, it would take the A64 would take the bull. But it's very, very important that we have to look at the traffic flow regarding Old Malton residents.
Well, two questions there. Firstly, in terms of the roundabout, the position of North Yorkshire County Council Highways is that a roundabout is required for even relatively small amounts of development. So in that sense, whilst there is a suggestion in the application papers that this might be phased in some way so that the livestock market and certain amounts of the business, certain amounts of the business park might be delivered first. The position of the Highway Authority, which are comments from James Kennedy at County Hall, are that the roundabout is required. In the first instance, it may not require all of the road widening to Eden House Road, but the roundabout would be required. And sorry, I missed the second point. The second point was about traffic going back into Malton, and obviously via Old Malton. Well, yes, clearly there could be an increase in traffic arising from the development. You could have, and almost certainly will have, linked trips that will increase traffic through into the town that way, but that's been assessed as part of the transport assessment. So yes, clearly there could be increased traffic, but it's something that the Highway Authority have looked at and said, well, this isn't creating a highway safety problem because of the nature of the traffic that's going back into the town or coming out from the town towards the livestock market area. I mean, how much of that would be car-borne and how much lorries? Clearly the potential location here would be that some of the lorries is actually removed from going through the town because of where it's coming from and where it's going back to. But if you've got linked trips, then yes, clearly there could be, you know, linked trips going back into the town centre to do further shopping or the like.
We've heard mentioned about speed cameras for Old Malton. We don't particularly have an issue with speeding. A report has just been done by North York County Council. Residents were worried about that, and people are agreeing to the speed limit at the moment, but there are worries. So could we put a condition on to alleviate worries regarding speed cameras? Is that beyond our control, or is that something that we could look at or work with the developers to do that?
Currently there's a 30 mile an hour limit at the edge of the town, isn't there, or the edge of the villages, I'll call it, as you go out into the town. And I think it would be difficult as part of this planning permission to say there was a requirement for that speed limit to be reduced any further in advance of any evidence that there was suddenly became a speeding problem as a result of that. I'm not aware of the county looking at any particular proposals to reduce that speed limit down to a 20, say, for example, which occasionally they'll do in the vicinity of a school because of obviously the safety issues there. And just further down the road at the county primary, there is a little bit of 20 mile an hour there. But I think you've got to sort of appreciate that at that point where the edge of the village is, you're coming off a trunk road, coming off at 60 and then straight down. Well, you're actually coming down almost immediately to a 30. Traffic naturally slows at that point when you've got to that stop point, because you have to stop, otherwise you might hit something coming from Pickering anyway. But I'm not aware of a speeding issue, and if there was one arisen, or one arose as a result 10 years down the road because of increased traffic, then that's something we'd have to take up with the county council as a road safety issue if we perceived an issue. It's one of those perversities that sometimes increased traffic actually slows traffic. You know, the more traffic on the road, the slower it goes. But I suppose you can only really test it at a future point in time.
And my last question is, I would just like to, sorry that I didn't give you this in advance, but I didn't actually think about it until a resident raised it. It's about the possibility of us using brownfield land. I personally aren't aware that we have any brownfield land in Moulton and Norton that would take a new cattle market. But, you know, the point has been raised about using agricultural land, and I think personally I would just like to think, have we got any brownfield land that we could use? I'm not aware that we have that could take the development, but I would just like you to maybe, and sorry that obviously it, I don't expect you to know everything, but
just cast me around both towns.
I know, sorry.
About that. But I think that the issue, and the local plan wrestled with this issue when it was dealing with the quantums of development it was looking at for each of the market towns, and identified in broad terms the amount of housing at Moulton and Norton, and also the amount of employment land at Moulton and Norton. The larger portions of land which we might describe as brownfield are probably in Norton rather than Moulton, and probably the major one I can think of is actually a site that suffers, as we know, from flooding, contamination and a variety of other access issues. It's difficult to get to, and it probably needs another bridge. So you're talking about development that is off the scale in terms of what we've currently got in terms of our local plan, which is seeking to scatter development around sites around both of the towns. I can't think of a commensurate brownfield site that is sufficient in size to accommodate a livestock market.
Thank
so in essence, we're looking at a greenfield site, as we are with most of our housing
sites. The only one that I could think of was the one in Norton off Wellham Road. And as you say, with all the problems that it's got, we need a new bridge, we need a new access. So in hindsight, whichever site we look at for a new cattle market, unfortunately, that it's the nature of the beast, it is going to have to be on some agricultural land.
Councillor Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. My questions are in a way similar to Lindsay's, but I'd like to just dig a bit deeper as well. The flooding, and this, I'm going to state the obvious here. We all know that a field soaks up water, and a hard industrial site has the potential to aggravate flooding, and so this is, like Lindsay, it's a major concern to me. We've also seen in recent times periods of very hot weather followed by sort of these instant torrential rainfalls which quickly run off baked land. Now, do I understand correctly that the attenuation ponds or lakes, whatever you call them, will at least maintain the sort of status quo regarding that, if not probably improve the situation with regard to the fast runoff water?
The design is to actually slightly improve the situation in terms of percentages of runoffs, but what I can't say to you is, and I can't look any of you in the eye and say, with a sufficiently bad flooding event, there won't be flooding. This can't cure flooding. What it can do is make sure that it washes its own face and consumes its own smoke and doesn't make anything else any worse. What we have on this particular scheme are a series of, I'll call them ponds for want of a better word, with one major facility, attenuation facility in front of Eden Camp, and that seeks to control and release at a controlled rate water, so it's holding stuff back. But in an extreme event, I mean, clearly you just get to a point where everything's saturated and we can't stop. If you think of the Derwent catchment, it's huge. So this, I can't speak to any of you tonight, look you in the eye and say there will never be a flooding event in Old Moulton again. What we can say is that this has been tested to see whether or not it makes that situation any worse, and it clearly doesn't.
I've got three questions. Do you want me to keep going with these? So the second one is regarding the landscape. We all know that Spitfire at Eden Camp has now become a kind of iconic landmark, and it does provide us with a unique tourist attraction. Do you consider the landscaping conditions that have been attached sufficiently protects the setting of this valuable tourist attraction? My concern here is that the land is low-lying, and when we sort of, as I drove here tonight actually from Pickering, the trees were all in, you know, the canopies were up, and you couldn't see very much of it. But coming off the A64, you're looking down, aren't you? I mean, how do you envisage that being assimilated into the landscape?
It shows what I know then. I thought it was a hurricane, not a Spitfire, but I'll stand corrected. I think the simple answer is, well, clearly the topography of the land assists in viewing Eden Camp as you come off the A64. You're at a higher level looking down on it. And so when you pass what is the bypass landscaping, which must have been put in the late 70s, early 80s, and has now since established, which is quite an effective screen in parts, you get past that and then you're right in the shop window of Eden Camp, and you've got a fairly panoramic view at an elevated level of 6 or 7 metres up, maybe more from the adjacent land. This scheme doesn't propose any buildings in that area, so that element of the shop window is clearly open and remains open. Like you, I've been travelling backwards and forwards from Pickering over the last few weeks, seeing as the hedgerows have developed, and although there's a small gap in the hedgerow on the 169 at one point where you get a view through, actually in car level you really have a fairly obscured view of Eden Camp at this time of the year until you actually get to the turn, and I don't think for the most part the development will obscure that. Clearly there's some structural landscaping to go in which will augment the planting and ultimately might give you a profile of planting that's 7-8 metres high with the buildings behind. But in terms of the shop window to Eden Camp, or Russell's for that matter, I think it's reasonably open.
Thank you. My husband's father was a bomber pilot and not a fighter pilot, so I probably got the Spitfire and the Hurricane wrong. So my last question, it was concerning the late papers and the roundabout. And I was a bit concerned about the funding from the LEP being not available on this first round of funding. So how important is it to any future funding bid in the second round of the application as it moves forward with the planning? Would it be better with the planning permission granted, or, you know, is it likely to improve the situation, or how do we stand? I think it's a bit following on from Lindsay's question.
Okay. I mean, I think in the late pages, and I'm looking for it now, there's a reference to the letter from the LEP. Because we'd quoted from it in part, and I thought members might wish to see the entire letter, which was pages 11 and 12 of the late pages. And the issue there was that the LEP bid, that we now led to believe there's a second mini bid round, which we think is in October. This scheme, as I understand it, scored very well in terms of the LEP priorities, was put forward, but actually got to a point where the BIS who made the decisions, the amount of money, it just fell below the line. So I think there are two projects in North Yorkshire that are still on that radar for the mini bid round. Clearly, from what I've gleaned from LEP officers, the fact that this site at that time when the bids were originally considered was not in, didn't have a planning permission, was a question mark over its deliverability that the other schemes didn't have, because Olympia Park had already got planning permission and things at North Allerton had got planning permission. So simply speaking, yes, if it's got a planning permission, then when the next bid round comes to us, which we're expecting imminently, then it will be in a better position to secure LEP funding.
Just as a supplementary, and it's similar to Lindsay's again, but I just want to push that a little bit further. How would it impact on the development if we didn't get the funding from the LEP in that second round? You know, it's a similar question. Can we tie it in? Because my concern is that we don't have that roundabout and we can't pay for it. So what would happen? Because it really is a strong concern here.
The situation is that the bid may well still go forward in the LEP. But if it's not successful, then clearly that potentially leaves a hole in the sums. And in effect, another source of external funding would have to be sourced, or lending or whatever, to fill that hole for the development to proceed as planned. If there's a requirement for the roundabout, well, it's a requirement for the roundabout and it's got to be satisfied.
How much was the roundabout going to cost?
Well, I'm not sure whether I'm at liberty to give you that
information.
I think it might have been in one of.
I think it was. I can't remember offhand.
On its own, it's a substantial six-figure sum. I'm looking at the back of the room. I think it's about £750,000. I'm getting a lot of nods. So that's the sort of order.
Councillor Woodward.
I did email some questions to Gary, just to sort of forewarn him. Right. What is the risk regarding biosecurity and disease at the current livestock market?
Well, actually, most of the first points that you raised were on page 17 were actually out of the Economic Development Officer's responses, weren't they? So I just refresh my memory of that before. Sorry. Main agenda. I just refreshed my memory of that this afternoon as to the context of his comments. Sorry. Could you bear with me a minute, Councillor Wood? And these were for other members' information. These were on pages 14 onwards, really, where we've got comments proceed from the LEP officer and also the council's economic development officer, which start on page 15 and go through to 16 and 17. I think the context of that statement was in the economic development officer was talking about the proposed development of the new livestock market, wasn't he? And the benefits of a modern purpose-built facility over the existing premises in the centre of the town. And one of the bullet points that he'd referred to was following on from the likelihood of being able to produce better environmental controls, including effluent management and treatment at the new premises as opposed to the old one, increased biosecurity, reduced risk of spreading disease, enhanced animal welfare standards. I think some of your questions were around all of those three issues, weren't they?
It was basically what is the risk regarding biosecurity and disease for the current market?
To be brutally honest, I'm not aware of any specific animal welfare issues at the livestock market, but it may well be because there are. You wouldn't design a livestock market nowadays like that starting from scratch. I'm sure pen sizes conform to some EC directive, and there has to be, completely open, brushed down, washable areas, which there are in the livestock market, but they're, Victorian and older. We're in a situation where in that part of the town there may be some old combined drains and sewers. They're all that sort of thing which when you get to a new site you design it to new standards. So I think it was a generalisation of a comment, but it was sort of stating, if you've seen the livestock market, I live very close to it myself, that it's creaking and groaning a bit, I suppose, in layman's terms.
Councillor Woodward, could you use your microphone?
Chair, I didn't realise it had gone off. The third question was, how was the let bid coming on, which you've sort of answered that for Councillors Burr and Sanderson. And will the development proceed if the let bid is unsuccessful?
That answer is absolutely can't answer that at the moment. I mean, clearly, if the let bid is unsuccessful, then in terms of the figures that we provided with, there is a hole that would need to be filled for it to proceed. But that could be filled by other external funding, borrow, you know, all manner of ways. So I can't say to you, well, if the let bid fails, then this all goes down the Swanee. It clearly makes life more difficult.
How much funding has been pledged by the Rydale Farmers Livestock Market Company?
Answer that question, Councillor Wood.
Can't, because you don't know, or you're not allowed to.
I've got some confidential information, but I can't answer that. It's part of the financial appraisal, which is one of your other questions, which is unfortunately confidential. And as you know, we try to be as open as we can, but unfortunately, we do get sometimes some very confidential information, which we get requested to be kept to officers and the council's appraisers, who look at matters of viability.
So members won't see the financial viability appraisal?
No.
Any other members? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. They seem to be worrying about the water and the flooding. Surely if Yorkshire Water are happy with the lagoons, and they think they'll do, they're the experts, allegedly, they should be taken notice of. I have a little bit of a concern, and I've mentioned it to Gary before, about the main lagoon at the front going with the pylons going over the top of it. But as long as that's securely fenced, I'm quite happy with it. And just for speed cameras, you've got to apply to North Yorkshire Police and Fire Authority. Thank you.
Councillor Wainwright.
Yeah, Madam Chairman. Back to the flooding issue and the runoff rate. If you look in the Fitzwilliam Trust document on page 77, this is a document that includes the retention ponds and everything. It says they're talking about a discharge rate of 15.23 litres per second. That's on page 77 of this agenda. Item 13.2.
Chairman, I think that's as the document was originally submitted.
Right. Yeah. So they are then able, you believe, to got down to what
it's
we're proposing.
It's the agricultural value, and I'm looking for the figure, and I can't.
1.14?
Yeah. 1.4? I'm going blind.
It's a condition 24.
I say I'm going blind here. I can't see it for looking. Yes. That's correct. I mean, what Chairman, is that although we were, the application was a substantial group of technical reports, clearly, with the best will in the world, you'll get a technical report and then the experts analyse it and will pick something up and say, look, there's something else that you need to address here or you need to look again. A variety of heritage reports on some of the later applications have been scrutinised, or the archaeological reports. It really just goes to evidence the fact that the drainage bodies are doing their job properly. You know, they're looking at this and saying, no, it needs to be this sort of runoff. And that's what comes forward then as a requirement in the form of a condition.
It does seem strange to me that this development, with those three retention ponds as they are, can have the runoff rate drop by 10% or 10th without anything extra needing to be done.
Okay, so there's no other questions, so we'll go straight into the debate now. Councillor Barr.
Thank you, Chairman. I've lived in Norton and Moulton all my life, and relocating the cattle market has always been an important issue. 2007, we really seriously started considering this, and serious negotiations started. Policy SP9 states that Moulton Livestock Centre should be retained, and as a council we need to work hard to deliver that policy. I think everyone recognises that whilst it sounds idyllic, it's not sensible to have a livestock market situated in a town centre. Just think about the effluent, etc. We do have an opportunity tonight to do the best for Moulton and seriously consider a location, as long as we are satisfied that all residents and obviously our planners' concerns are addressed. After listening to all the questions and all the answers, I do feel that I am in a position to make up my mind. Moulton has always been a market town, and it needs to continue to be a market town. It's vital for the economy, not just for Moulton, but for the farming community, and the farming community to stay in Rydale and trade in Rydale. And this may be one of our last chances to seriously consider a serious move and gain some added benefits. This application is not from the Fitzwilliam Estate, but it's from another separate Fitzwilliam company. And the Fitzwilliam Estate have already gained planning permission on the livestock market, so we need to secure a new site. This new site that's been put forward is good. It's so close to Moulton, but I really like it because of the traffic coming straight off the A64. I think it would mitigate some of the traffic concerns, and the large lorries would come off the A64 and go straight onto the new site, alleviating some traffic problems in Old Moulton and in Moulton. The new site would also create huge employment growth, which is also in line with our policy SP6. I don't think Moulton can be inward looking, and we must be forward thinking. And whether we like it or not, we have got to plan for the future. We need a new livestock centre, we need business units, we need new employment initiatives, and we do need our farmers to stay in Rydale and not have to travel to York or Thirsk to trade. My questions and concerns have been discussed tonight, and in light of a better location for the livestock market, the economic viability of our town, the employment growth, the business opportunities generated, and possibly a new beginning for Moulton, I would actually like to move approval.
Thank you. Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I endorse everything that Councillor Burr has said. I've had some notes down there, and she's covered nearly every one of them. Thank you. I think it's a great opportunity for Moulton, and the livestock centre is the lifeblood of Moulton. If we lose that, we've lost everything. And another thing, if we bring in people like Bishop Burton in, they're interested in, I mean, that's going to be fantastic. And I would like to second Councillor Burr. Thank you.
Councillor Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, I'm in full support of the retention of a livestock market in Moulton. And as somebody who's both visited and used the market over many years, I'm entirely aware of the associated business it both brings, not only that, but retains in Moulton. The associated agricultural industrial units are what I think are actually visionary, and I think there'll be a great pull for the whole of Rydale, not just Moulton. So as well as supporting the new livestock market, they will bring people in from outside of the area. The site's in an excellent location, as Councillor Burr's already said, close to the A64, the A60, A169, and close enough to Moulton to bring link trips. In terms of policy, I disagree with Councillor Burr there. I think SP9 doesn't say we should have a livestock market. I think it actually says indirectly support the retention of a livestock market. by indirect support, not direct support. So I think there's a little bit of discrepancy there, but I am in support of that move. And I'm delighted that it will offer employment opportunities for young people particularly. SB6, again, yes, says we need the delivery of distribution land for employment, and it is a different type of distribution employment land to that offered at the York Road. A livestock market may not be seen by some to be classed as the ideal bed partner, but the development lying either side of that road that goes into Eden Camp site actually means that the associated industries are in close proximity but not actually on top of each other, so I like that bit. Likewise, the A1, A2 use issue, I think this is very different to what will happen in the town centre. It's geared to the sellers at the livestock market, not to the normal trade that would happen in Moulton. And I think once the market has moved, that will be a greater impact on the town centre than actually just the loss or the competition from an extra cafe that's slightly outside the town. That said, the implications of the application are complex, and we do need to debate the broader consequences of any decision made. 5.4 of the report says this plan looks to support staple sectors of the economy, such as manufacturing and tourism. The site's nearly 18 hectares in size, and so we should think long and hard before considering converting our landscape and countryside, because to me it is one of Rydell's greatest assets, and we should really think about it before it goes into a brown site. I think, Gary, you've answered those questions, so I'm happy with the answers that you've given. I think all it leaves for me to say is that I'm going to support the application, and I think we'll be at a greater loss if we lose the livestock market than if this doesn't go ahead. Thank you.
Councillor Arnold.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not a farmer, but I live in a farming community, and I've lived and worked in farming all my life. And all my neighbours use the livestock market in Moulton, and all of them are in agreement that we would be far better off if we didn't have the market in Moulton. And I would like, and I would have thought that all the residents in Moulton were very pleased that the livestock market moved out to Moulton as well, and reduction in their traffic. I can fully understand the concerns about building on the Creamfield site, because I've quite often moaned about that in the past myself. But I think this site is probably the best we're ever going to get for what we need, with the easy access to main routes. This site can not only provide the market, but everything else that goes with it. And I feel it is so important that we retain our livestock market in Moulton, and I am therefore fully supportive.
Councillor Woodward.
Thank you, Chair. It looks like I'm going to find myself in a not unusual position of opposing most of the other planning committee members. Yes, Councillor Burr, SP9 does say we want to retain a livestock market in Rydale. It doesn't, however, say that it has to be on this site. And no, I know you didn't say it did. And I can't believe that such as areas of land near the Baiton factory, areas of land near York Road Industrial Estate that are already heavily built up as industrial areas and are also closely linked to the A64 wouldn't be better. Councillor Sanderson corrected Councillor Burr by saying it says we will indirectly support, and I hope that is what it stays, because what worries me is we get planning permission for this, the money doesn't come forward for the roundabout, and then if we can go back to the opening speaker, Councillor Andrews, we're held to ransom by the farmers who are seen as very important in this area, who are saying, we can't get our new livestock market, can we have some money, please, Rydale District Council? Building on a greenfield site. Well, yes, I'm not a great fan of building on a greenfield site either, Councillor Arnold, but this report is a great eye-opener because it's very honest in places where it maybe doesn't mean to be quite as honest as it is. And page 73, I think it's on, of the design and access statement, tells us that the arable land at Eden Camp has limited ecological value, and it goes on to tell us that the land where the enabling development, even though it's farmland, has limited ecological value, which only goes to prove what I've thought all along, that the claim that farmers are guardians of the countryside isn't quite what it doesn't mount up to what they claim. And we will probably end up with more biodiversity on a built-up site with the ponds, the increased hedgerows, flowers and shrubs that will be planted than we have with the site not being built up. So I can't support this, Chair. Like I said, we know it's going to go through, but I have my concerns that we will end up being held to ransom for the 700,000 or whatever it is for the roundabout. And the traffic is going to be terrible. Page 75 says that users of the roads, this is about the views, users of the roads are, however, transient and would soon pass the site. I think that's wildly optimistic when you've got 1,000 workers leaving that site at rush hour on that roundabout, that people using the road will only be there for a short time. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Sanderson.
If everybody's spoken, I'd just like to come back on one point that Councillor Woodward's made. I think we've all had reservations about this, and I think we have troubleshooted them. But I think at this stage, we ought to be looking at what's on offer, and we should actually be shouting to those businesses, come on, come to Rydale, it's here for you, we embrace you. And instead of being so negative, I think we should be really positive and see the good that's going to come out of this. So I just wanted to counteract actually what was
Thank
said
you. There. Thank you. It's been moved by Councillor Burr and seconded by Councillor Herb. The recommendation is for approval, subject to the completion of a Section 106 agreement relating to the developer contribution and conditions. So we'll take the vote on that now, please. So that is approved. Thank you.
Chairman, just to reiterate something that I mentioned earlier on in the presentation, that although we've resolved to approve this, we do need to refer this to the Secretary of State. It's a procedural requirement under the Town and Country Planning Consultation brackets, England brackets, Direction 2009. Immensely tedious, but it is something that we do need to do. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll move on to item agenda 5, page 97 on your agendas. Gary, do you want to... Councillor Richardson.
If I may, Chair, my declaration of interest, I've been lobbied on all of the items tonight. Thank you.
We all have. We've all declared an interest. Thanks, Councillor Richardson.
Should do really, shouldn't I? I'm too good to him. I'll let him off. Yes, I will. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So we're just waiting for one or two people to leave the room. thank you, Chairman. Again, members, because of the nature of the report and we're awaiting some information to be received and then appraised, I've got a number of updates. Perhaps the first and most important one relating to this report, as members will have picked up from the report itself, was the receipt of some further updated noise assessment information, which we received last week and which has been appraised by your environmental health officers. Again, if members can just turn very quickly to, on the agenda papers, the location plan, which I'm now trying to find for you, which is, well, the red line plan is on page 107 of the agenda papers, and you'll see that the site, which comprises two parcels of land, which are identified on that plan there as the show field and the pasture fields, is actually bounded by, to the east side, the rear of properties, commercial properties, industrial properties on the Showfield Lane industrial estate. So clearly a sensitive boundary in terms of the potential for noise in relation to residential property. To the north, although it's not a large boundary, is a boundary with the A64, heavily used trunk road, and again a source of noise. On the western side boundary, looking at page 107, you'd be forgiven for thinking that's an open field, but actually that is the eastern site boundary of the Taylor Wimpey site. So recently members granted permission for an additional 80 or so dwellings on the former allotment site there. In fact, it effectively is a built site. It's being built out now. The first 40 odd are on site already. In total, there are in excess of 350 dwellings, I think, on that site in total. So it's bounded on three sides by either industrial land, the A64 trunk road, and the Taylor Wimpey residential scheme. To the south, then, you have the side and rear of properties on Wentworth Street, the flats on the entrance to the Wentworth Street car park, and the cemetery. So in essence, the site is surrounded either by the existing development limit or by existing properties under construction or by a trunk road. If you just turn on to page 108, you'll see there that the illustrative landscaped master plan, I'll call it, which shows the layout of the roads and how access into the site will be gained. The only reserve matter that has been applied for is actually the roundabout that's proposed onto the Showfield Lane, which is close to the junction or the boundary with the nearest industrial premises. And that is surrounded then by an open landscaped area and an in and out arrangement to the site with a loop arrangement around the site to show a series of residential areas which are identified by different plot numbers. Adjacent to the boundary with the A64 is a 20 metre landscaped belt within which a noise acoustic barrier would be constructed, partly of bund, partly of acoustic fence. In that sense, it's not dissimilar from the Taylor Wimpey scheme, which has benefited from quite a good amount of existing hedgerow planting, but members who've been up there recently will probably see the acoustic fence which is being put behind it, which actually acts as a barrier to most of the traffic noise. In addition, on the eastern site boundary, where they're proposing or showing a 10-metre landscape bund, for the most part, the site is elevated above the open rear yard areas of developments on Showfield Lane, which is beneficial from a noise point of view. But however, there is still a need for an acoustic screen on that boundary, which again is proposed as a combination of earth bank and noise attenuated fencing. All of that has been modelled at length by the applicant's acousticians and checked out by our environmental health officers, who are now in a position to give the development the all clear, subject to it meeting certain conditions, which I'll advise you of in a moment. And those include, if I can find it, sorry, developing the site to effectively World Health Organization good standards. This was a debate we had actually at appeal at Thornton Road Industrial Estate, if members will recall. And this was actually a debate at appeal that we won, where we actually applied particular noise standards to either garden areas or internal rooms, with windows being able to be opened. On that proposal, there was a suggestion that mechanical ventilation was a way of dealing with things, and we weren't happy with that, and the inspector backed us on that argument. So in that sense, the conditions that are recommended are ones which set a certain amount of noise criteria for dwellings and gardens, not to exceed certain levels, and also a series of mitigation strategies relating to the detail of the bund and barrier construction. And for Schofield Lane boundary in particular, it does require that boundary noise level conditions will be capable of being satisfied at the boundary. So those three extra conditions for this application. With those conditions, your environmental health officer feels that this scheme would provide a good standard of amenity for future residents. In addition to that update, the Countryside Management Officer has looked at the additional bat survey information. You'll think, how on earth are bats on that site? Well, actually, there are a couple of redundant farm buildings on the western boundary, relatively modern in construction, but actually there are a couple of bat roosts in them. And although they're of low risk and low importance, he has required that would be some mitigation for bats as part of a biodiversity enhancement scheme for the site. So that needs to be covered by an additional condition. The final point relates to that raised by Natural England, who originally had raised some concerns with regard to this application and the other residential applications, who have subsequently, on receipt of further information, confirmed they have no objection, subject to the imposition of a condition, which is rather loosely worded in their response, I have to say, but is essentially saying that provided there is a use of sustainable drainage systems in the detailed or reserved matters, then that would suffice. So that aside, Chairman, that I think gives you the updates. I would like to raise at this point the, although it's been implicit, probably been more explicit with it, in terms of what we've talked about just with the viability, the cross-subsidy, those issues that we're dealing with. These applications are subject to a Section 106 agreement that does require developer contributions to be made in the usual way. And, for example, this development does make an education contribution, which, as you'll have seen from the report, is substantial. It also makes a contribution to the secondary school as well. It also makes a contribution towards Brambling Fields. When you total all those up, they're quite substantial matters. This scheme did have viability issues from the off, which the council's assessor has looked at and has confirmed that the figures are valid. As part of the approach to promoting contributions to relocating the livestock market, this scheme does not provide any affordable on-site. It's a market scheme. But as part of the interlinked approach of the council's policy in relation to affordable housing, off-site affordable housing provision is being promoted, but it's in a later application that's on this scheme, on the agenda tonight. So there is a linkage here with the legal agreement that seeks to deliver a capital receipt that then is used up front to help with the livestock market. So I just wanted to try and make you aware of the mechanism that the Section 106 is wrestling with. In the meantime, I'll just show you some photographs and then we'll go to questions, Chairman. As quick as I can, Chairman. This is the... This is the first view of the site, which is the existing exit or entrance into Wentworth Street car park. So you're looking out over Schofield Lane towards the Schofield. And in the background, you've got the farm buildings I was just talking about that have got the couple of bats in. That was the survey. As you can see, you get a feel for the sloping nature of the site. And as you go down, this is the Schofield, which members will probably be very much aware of. And this tree boundary is actually the rear of the boundary of the first of the properties on Schofield Lane. So it's actually quite green at that point. As you go further on, it becomes more open and more apparent, although the site is actually elevated in the main above the backs of premises on Schofield Lane. This is a view taken from Outgang Road, looking down from the western site boundary. You're at a relative high point here, but looking down, and the site drops towards the rear of properties on Schofield Lane, and you can see there's a variety of different types of buildings on that industrial estate. As I say, the ground level at this point is elevated above the ground level of the adjacent industrial units. And this is just panning round in the general direction of the A64 over here. I apologise for the darkness of this photograph. This is taken from the bridge on Outgang Lane if you've gone that far. So you're looking back. This is the A64 in the foreground in a slight cutting here. Quite a well-screened boundary at this point, but nevertheless the noise does leak into the site. So there is a need for an acoustic screen behind that highway planting. And in the background, again, you can just see the industrial units. This is a view taken from, this is the boundary with the A64. This is a view taken from, I'll call it a road, but I think it's actually officially a bridleway. I did make the mistake of taking my car down it and wished I hadn't, actually. It's totally unsurfaced, quite potholed. But at that point, you just get a feel for the screening on the existing boundary. So this is the, to orient yourself, that's the telecommunication mast on Schofield Lane. These are the industrial units nearest to the boundary. And this is a view further down, again looking in. So at that point there, you can just see that agricultural building on the skyline. So at that point there, if you were stood there, you could probably just about catch a view of the skyline in this area here without any additional planting. I think that's it, Chairman. Thank you. Yes, sure.
We'll have two speakers for this one. To start with, District Councillor, Councillor Paul Andrews, if you'd like to come and take your seat there, Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I speak to oppose these proposals. Much of what I have to say on this one also applies to the other housing applications. So rather than repeat myself, I've decided to say everything on this one. My main concern is that there simply is not the infrastructure to accommodate the new development. The schools, surgery, etc. do not have the capacity to accommodate all the new development which has been approved, let alone this one. The foul water sewers are part of a combined system and do not have the capacity to accommodate more development, as I've already stated. Surface water drainage is to be by way of soakaways. This, Chairman, is a joke. There is a system of soakaways which drains Pasture Lane and the Showfield at the present time. Most of the manhole covers are overgrown and have not been inspected for years. The soakaways at the bottom of the hill always flood when it rains, and I've asked the Highways Area Office to deal with this on many occasions, but it continues to flood. As regards highways capacity, many of my concerns would be met if there was going to be an intersection between the A64 and the Broughton Road. However, this is not going to happen in the foreseeable future. And all but 35 of the 300 proposed new houses will access direct into Pasture Lane. I've included in my objection statement my calculation of the cumulative impact of the permissions which have been granted and of this application if it is granted. I will summarise this as follows. If you take the afternoon peak hour, the current proposals of this application will generate 216 vehicular trips in that hour. The applicants broadly agree this figure. They say 200. The development at Broughton Rise will generate 252 new trips. The Superstore on Wentworth Street car park, if it goes ahead, will have only one public vehicular access, and that is onto Pasture Lane. It will generate 626 new trips in that hour. This makes a peak hour total of 1,094 new trips, or one new trip every 3.3 seconds. There is no way either Pasture Lane or the town can accommodate such a heavy increase in traffic. I believe there are also grounds of planning amenity on which this application could be refused, even if there is not a 5-year supply of land. Under the old plan, the show field is described as this gently sloping, open field is important in views from the adjacent, heavily trafficked pasture lane.
30 seconds.
It also acts as a buffer between the built-up area and the ribbon of farmhouses and agricultural buildings along Outgang Lane. As such, it was protected by the old plan. There is a site selection in progress, Chairman, and as the site is previously considered to be important, no permission should be given until the reason for the protection of this site has been properly reviewed as part of this process. I would ask the members to refuse this application, and bearing in mind the point about cross-subsidy, yes, we are being held to ransom, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. In view of what's been said, would you like to speak, Mr. Brailsford? You have nothing to add.
Summarises all the
okay.
responses from the technical experts and consultees. Thank you.
Members, any questions? Councillor Barr.
Thank you, Chairman. I think I've got five questions, if that's okay. The most frequently asked question to me as a local councillor when people see that applications have come forward for new housing is about the schools. Every parent is worried about their children's place at school. It's really, really important. And am I right in thinking, or have I imagined it or read it wrong, that if these applications are passed, there would be about £1.4 million that would actually go into schools in Norton and Malton, because obviously this is where the capacity is going to be, to provide extra places, etc. Because I maybe should have declared an interest, obviously, as a county councillor, that there isn't a need for a new school at the moment. You know, however, if we do go over, obviously that will generate that. But 1.4 million or 1.2 million is a substantial amount of money to alleviate a lot of residents' concerns about school places. So could I just have that confirmed, please?
To clarify that, I think I'm correct in saying I've got all of the documents in front of me just to be absolutely precise. But and I'm drifting off on to beyond this application in terms of what the total amount is. But the deficiency that this has been identified for these various sites in Malton relates to Malton County Primary as the primary school. And that's given rise to a series of contributions. And the 300 or so dwellings have also identified that there's a secondary school deficiency as well, which is a first. I think up until now we've not had any secondary school issue because of capacity, but this one adds to that. The totality is about 1.4 million or a little bit over that. For this particular scheme, for example, on this county primary, it's 770,000 for the primary. So, they're substantial figures. I think, that's the advice we've been given by county. Obviously, they constantly appraise what's required in the way of contributions, but I think those contributions are probably what the developer was expecting to see when they'd done their own investigations before they'd made the planning application. So it's not a surprise.
Thank you. I just think it's really important because residents often don't know that, you know, we take this very seriously, and sometimes it's not reported just how much money is actually going to come in to make sure that our schools have got the extra places, etc. My second question is about the noise, because obviously residential houses next to an industrial estate, we have actually got another residential estate at the other side of Pasture Lane, and I just wanted to be reassured that those tests that had been done about the noise, have we got the report to say that these have been tested and they do work? Because as you have pointed out, the site is quite a lot higher, and I am quite concerned that we mitigate that noise if this is approved.
I wouldn't pretend to understand the dark arts and magic that goes into a noise assessment. That's why we've got environmental health officers to do that for us. But in terms of the assessment that's been made, clearly there are, of quite sophisticated models that have sat there with the environmental health officers and seen things being plugged in and to see what the implications of buns or banks or fences, acoustic fences at certain heights and levels and positions, or positions of houses in relation to those boundaries, can derive at a facade a level that is an acceptable noise level. And it's quite sophisticated modelling that's done. I think it's on two levels, really. One is the sort of constant noise that you might have from a road or a certain type of industrial premises. And then from most industrial premises, you can model then what the implication of an intermittent banging and clanging noise might be. So it's an intermittent noise, might be quite noticeable, but it's gone in seconds. Sorry. And it's modelling for that, really. And that's been quite a task with regard to the industrial estate, because it's quite trying to be reasonable in terms of what the activities are that are going on the industrial estate, because you have to do a sort of de facto analysis of what's there. Some of these premises have got hours limitations, some of them haven't. A lot of them are used 9 to 5, some of them aren't. If I contrast that to Thornton Road, some of those were being used 24 hours with premises with the doors and windows open and, chaps on the top of double-decker buses with angle grinders. You know, it was a very different sort of circumstance. And that industrial estate was deliberately put a field away from the town so they could get on and do that sort of stuff. This one is actually cheap by jowl with existing residential property. And, I can't say we've never had a complaint over the years in the environmental health from the existing estate, but they're intermittent and environmental health deal with them. So their assessment on amenity is, well, you provide these barriers and that will deal with the bulk of the noise. And subject to those conditions, environmental health are happy to take the development so close to the industrial estate. They'd be the first to object if they thought they were going to get problems.
Thank you for that. I do think we have got that actually right, because most weeks I go down that estate just to see what's going on, and it is quite a quiet estate, as you say, and there is a lot of retailing going on. But thinking long term, some of those units could change and could, apply for different usage. So I just think we've got to make the provision now, and I feel satisfied that we've done that.
I think obviously this is a long established industrial estate. It's on the line of an old railway line, I think. It's a really old, Councillor Wainwright's nodding. Some of the older premises aren't the subject of any conditions, for example. But when we get applications for changes of use, our environmental health officers will often use that opportunity to introduce controls to make sure that the future of the business is controlled with hours or noise levels or whatever it might be. So it's a two-way process, really.
Thank you. Where are we with our five-year land supply if we omit Gladman's? I've got a few figures banding around 4.39 or 4.89, but I'm just not really quite sure. Obviously, we have to look at our figures, and us councillors have to be aware, but I just wondered.
Our official line... hot off the press as of the 30th of June, Councillor Woodward's got his pen ready, is as set out in the report, which is 4.39. Dan Wheelwright, who's our guru on this, would point out to Councillor Woodward, does not take account of the 80 that we've just granted recently, just on the opposite side of the track to the former allotments area. Not because they're not 80 dwellings and aren't dwellings, but because the trajectory of that build out, because they're all going to be built by the same developer, means that those additional 80 are not going to appear until years 7, 8, 9 possibly. So in terms of 5 years worth of trajectory, we've not been able to count them. For these, we are assuming that this will be, at least in part, if not a good chunk of it, immediately countable, because we suspect it will be a fresh site, in all probability a different developer who will build out at their own rate. However good your site is, if you've got one developer, they'll only build out to a certain level. And if you can get 50 off a site a year, you've done really, really well. And I know they did in Pickering, but that was a fantastic site looking out over the moors and an 8-hectare park. It was a unique set of circumstances, I think. So for the most part, developers estimate around 30 to 40 a year. And, you know, so from that point of view, you should be able to count a fair chunk of this into your five-year supply, but I'm sure people who would dismantle our five-year supply will say, well, you can't count all of this 200 in your 5 years, you'd probably count 150 maybe. So that will add on to your supply. So it could take us just over the 5 years when Dan's trajectorised it. It'll be close, but over. Having said that, I mean, our plan does talk about having a margin, and the MPPF talks about having a margin as well. So whilst on the one hand it wouldn't trigger the presumption in favour of granting planning permission, once you've got to that permission, it puts you in a better position. So was that the answer you hoping?
I wanted to just make sure that the 4.39 was what we were working to. And I think I'll round off by this one. I'm very much in favour of affordables. I think it's really, really important that we have affordables, and I absolutely get it where this is all coming from and this site's not acceptable, but they have put in another site, etc., etc. But my biggest fear, and I'm sure, Gary, you will tell me that this wouldn't happen, is that if this was passed and then the affordables didn't get built. And I just want to absolutely nail it that, you know, if we don't put any affordables on this site, that we make sure that we have affordables, because this is part of the big picture.
It's clearly part of the proposal. We're trying to deliver a linked Section 106 agreement to achieve that. I'm looking at the back of the room and there's a lot of nodding going on, but clearly our preference is for accommodation on site. You know, in terms of a normal approach to affordable housing. And it's only when there are particular issues around the particular type of accommodation, or we'll take commuted sums to take it and then use it somewhere else. But in this instance, because the developer was in the position of a landowner as part of the application to say, right, well, we've got potentially an off-site solution, to provide us with a proposal which wasn't just taking the money and taking it for the livestock market, but actually coming up with a link scheme in terms of the legal agreement to actually say, right, well, there's a site here just across the way that, as the crow flies, it's probably, you know, 400 or 500 yards, to be providing, as the latest plan shows, circa 50 affordable units. That our task is to deliver that through the legal agreement.
So just to clarify,
by the way, we're going off application now, but Broadacres are there wanting to step in.
I know we're going off application, but we are trying to look at these in totality for overall deliverability. But have we got a legal agreement in place that those affordables will be built?
There are heads of terms, but the detail of the legal agreement, assuming these decisions are made, will be carrying on tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
Councillor Sanderson.
Thank you. The obvious question has already been answered on the five-year building supply, but the question that I did want to ask was about the Bramblingsfield contribution. We've already built Bramblingsfields. Where are we at with paying for it, and where are we at with the helping out the traffic through Moulton by alternative schemes? You know, would this go to any of this? Because I think, you know, people have given these contributions, developers are given contributions, and they want to see an improvement in the centre of Moulton, and it doesn't seem to be coming forward. So where will this contribution go to? Actually, the Bramblingsfields junction that's been built, or sorting out the problems that still exist within Moulton?
The contributions that we still continue to collect in advance of SIL are in part to pay what we've bankrolled for Bramblingsfields. So it's already, we still pay that money off. But you're very correct in that, I'll say very correct, is that such a thing? You're correct in the sense that the thing that hasn't yet happened associated with Bramblingsfields is the complementary measures. And that was all around the measuring of traffic, what's happening with the traffic, is it doing what it needs to do, before the county council, who are actually leading on this, actually come back in and say, well, actually, we've provided the hardware, the slip road, the roundabouts and what have you, to effectively get some of the large traffic, or the bulk of the large traffic, out of the town and going round and going to Norton or around, that is delivered. And I think county's first bite at that was to say, right, let's put it in, sign it and see how it's working. They're still monitoring it in terms of the effectiveness of the scheme before they then pitch in with what might be the stick rather than the carrot. And those schemes could involve things like traffic regulation orders, all manner of things. But the complementary measures have yet to be launched. We thought they were going to model it for a year, but they want some more time. So that's where we are at the moment, sort of in the hands of county.
Councillor Richardson.
This is the this is the first time I've seen any discussion of an interlinked report. I was just wondering if you could clarify the meaning. I've picked up some information from what Councillor Burr asked in terms of a linked 106 agreement. It's a legal agreement. It's binding. But I just, I've got reservations about when you have potentially four applications all linked in some way. How that works and why that isn't all one application. I just wonder if you could kind of outline to a layman why that's the case and why that's acceptable.
It's a new one for us, put bluntly. We haven't had many occasions where we've had to do a legal agreement that's relating to more than a couple of sites, but I can think of examples for example where not on all fours with this, but just as a way of explanation, whereby we've had a proposal to relocate a business but grant the planning permission for housing to assist in the relocation of business, and the legal agreement has tied the two together so that they actually end up delivering. This is slightly more complicated because it's four, and that's what the legal agreement will wrestle with. I'm looking across at Anthony because I know he's working with it and on it, as are the solicitors of the other side, but it's to ensure that the deal, if you like, is delivered. But it's a challenge.
Whether to be any problems with this delivering of these particular projects, assuming they're passed, what enforcement do we have? What is the legal process if it needs to be challenged?
Well, if you've got a signed legal agreement, you know, both parties, however many parties that are signed, and there is a, as there is with any agreement, actually, from that point of view, if you entered into an agreement with the council on something particular on a planning application and you reneged on the terms of the agreement, then the remedy is an injunction.
Councillor Woodward.
Thank you, Chair. Where are we? Of the 1,500 homes planned for Moulton and Norton, it's one of the questions I emailed you, Gary, planned for Moulton and Norton during the life of the local plan, how many have already been given approval?
I spoke to our guru this afternoon. These are ones approved but not yet built. So in other words, counting into that figure, he reckoned it was around about 500.
That's without this, obviously.
Yeah.
So if this goes through
I can't give you a precise figure tonight, but it's around about a third of the minimum, because the 1,500's are an at least figure.
Mm.
Yeah.
So if this goes through tonight, these three, we're up to sort of 800, roughly.
Yeah, you will be.
Thanks. And going back to page 17, I know it's the previous item, but it's as they're all interlinked, this was one of the bits that related to housing rather than the livestock site. Where is the evidence that building more houses makes them more affordable?
I haven't got any, but the let officer is adamant that if you Google housing supply and supply of housing and house prices, that you will get some information that substantiates that.
Right.
View. you asked me today, so I haven't had a lot of chance to look at it. But, I mean, I think essentially they're looking at a supply and demand issue. I appreciate that could be very localised. And unless you've got big numbers, then it might not work at a market town level. Ultimately, it would work if you take the economics and say, right, there's enough supply, it's got to work. But macroeconomics meets market town.
And finally, who are the planning steering group?
I think that was a phrase used by the author of the documents. Hmm. Because prior to the submission of the application, there was a pre-application proposal which was attended by officers from here, representatives from the applicants and agents, noise acousticians, a variety of officers and applicants.
Thanks.
Any more questions? Councillor Wainwright.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Talking about affordable houses again, it seems to me that we're moving away from our accepted policy and we're now advocating a ghetto policy. In other words, we're going to let the developer build select houses and bungalows on this particular site and to others and put the not-so-desirable houses on a not-so-desirable site on Rainbow Lane at the back of Pisa Hill. Do you have any comment to make on that?
Well, I've never planned a ghetto, and I shan't start now. The viability suggests this scheme can't deliver a single affordable house. The developer has been cognizant of that fact, and at the prompting by officers of this council said, well, look, if you can't provide any on-site, are there any off-site opportunities? And clearly this is an opportunity that's been put forward to us. We wouldn't recommend to you the development of a site for affordable housing that didn't have the same standard of amenity as a market scheme. Broadacres are a responsible registered social landlord and wouldn't build it if they thought that it was going to create a problem. So I really don't regard it as a ghetto in that sense. The scheme that is being looked at, and we're straying off application again slightly, is a mixed scheme that provides for a range of affordable houses and tenures that meet that need. And it's just this sometimes the view of affordable housing that's put out that it's some sort of second-rate accommodation. I think when you look at the affordable housing we've provided in and around Rydale, that just isn't the case. And I know we've, in an ideal world, for example, on the Taylor Wimpey, we would, the word pepper pot is used. But we're pepper potting 20s and 30s at a time. You know, it's a big scheme and that you get quite a large concentration of affordable housing in one place, which will be a combination of rented or shared discount for sale. There's no evidence that we've proved anything that then becomes a ghetto, that becomes a problem for... So, you know, some gives rise a development that gives rise to social problems because it is what it is. So, yes, our preferred option is to have on-site affordable. This site couldn't provide any. This site was promoted as an attempt by the developer to demonstrate that the credentials were what they were, and they took their affordable housing accommodation duties very seriously.
If there are no more questions, we'll enter into debate. Anyone? Councillor Bell?
I am happy to move this application. I think in life, sometimes there has to be negotiations, and I think what we need to do is we need to look at why we are here tonight at this extraordinary meeting and what we are discussing. We are actually looking about creating a new livestock market. Some councillors may like that, some councillors may not. Some councillors may say we are diverting from what we are doing. But this is quite huge within what us councillors normally do in our day jobs. i.e. we normally get an application for a few houses and we do it. And Luke has quite rightly pointed out this is very, very different. But as I say, in life, in business, whatever we do, we have to negotiate and we have to weigh up the pros and the cons of how it's all going to fit in. And no, everything doesn't fit into nice little square boxes or round shapes, etc. But in your conscience, you have to vote for what you think is right. And yes, we are diverting. And I made it quite clear that I was really worried about the affordables. And I do understand that now that can be accommodated. And I'm quite cross to hear the word ghetto, because that's actually a very nasty word for people who live in affordable housing. And that is not what we're here to create tonight. And I really do take issue with that. This particular site is actually on the Pisa Hill site, which was affordable housing. It's not affordable now, but it's a nice mix and it would sit quite nicely. And I know I'm diverting and obviously we're not looking at that site now, but they are in totality. So please, let's not get nasty and say about ghettos and Rydales producing them, because that is not what we're about tonight. We're making it a place for people, all types of people, to be able to live, work in Moulton. So that's what we need to do. Now, this site, I'm happy to move approval, will create that. So I feel in my conscience that that is the right thing to do. So I'd like to move approval.
Thank you. Any other members? Councillor Woodward.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know that I can support this because primarily of the interlinking. Councillor Burr asked, have we got a legal agreement that the affordable will get built? And I'm pretty sure we will end up with some watertight agreement that the affordable will get built. But when? Gary said it. Roughly, you get 40 houses a year built on a site. So to build the market housing is going to take 6 years at 40 a year. And I can't see them starting the affordable housing when they're needing to sell the market housing to fund the cattle market. They ain't going to start with the affordable, spending money with no income coming back from it.
Sorry, I misled you there. It's Broadacres that's going to be dealing with the affordable. They're going to take that on as a 100% affordable scheme.
So it won't be the developers that are paying the builders and everything. It'll be Broadacres that are getting the builders in.
This, I'm not sure who's actually going to put the bricks in the ground, but in terms of the developer, as we understand it, it's going to be Broadacres. So they're not linking, they're not going to be waiting for this developer build 10 before they can build one.
That's great, Gary, that's great. And I hope then that the legal agreement says that we get on with the affordable as soon as possible. Lindsay also said that affordable is important. And I think it was either in the Gazette or the Mercury only this week, again, about Rydale being in the top, whatever number it said, of most unaffordable areas in the country. With an average house price, I think it was just over 200 or just under 200 and an average wage of 18,000. And while Gary couldn't tell me or wasn't allowed to tell me what the farmers have pledged towards the livestock market, we know exactly what it's going to cost the homeless people, homeless families in Rydale. Because 50 affordable out of 312 new homes is 16%, and we have a policy of 35%. So to pay for a new livestock market, the developers are robbing the homeless and the poor of Rydale to subsidise the farmers.
I've got to correct you there. That is, you really need to think very carefully about what you're saying.
Well, come on,
the viability already demonstrates that it wasn't going to provide 35% anyway. We were already working on a 15% viability. They've taken that away and provided more than the viability showed that the site could have delivered. That was because of other abnormals.
So nothing to do with the livestock market?
That was as it was with the site, with all the abnormals, the roundabouts, all the stuff that the site has got to provide, the acoustic measures, everything else. It was struggling. The Taylor Wimpey site struggled. They all struggle. They've all struggled since 2008. You know, it's not a... We wouldn't have agreed a situation, or certainly Roger Barnsley, our valuer, wouldn't have agreed a situation where somebody was promoting affordable housing at, say, 20%, if the figures were demonstrating, actually, well, there's no reason why it shouldn't have been demonstrating 35%.
I'm sorry, Gary, but this is an enabling development for a livestock market. So you can't tell me it's not viable to produce affordable on there if it wasn't paying for a livestock market.
It's providing a capital receipt for the livestock market, yes.
Exactly, and what I'm saying is we are robbing the homeless of Rydale, who should be getting 35% affordable, to pay for a livestock market that we can't even be told how much the farmers are putting towards that livestock market. And I can't support that, Gary.
Councillor Richardson.
I'd just like to pick up on Councillor Wainwright's word of ghetto. It is a shocking word, and but it's something I hadn't thought about before. It was mentioned, and it's quite a simple concept, really. Are we socially cleansing one area of our town by only building market housing and then putting social housing somewhere else? Something to consider. And as Councillor Burr said, we need to take a balanced view. Is that acceptable to deliver more affordable housing in Moulton? As a man of principle, I want 35% affordable housing in line with our policy, preferably more, because there's a need in Rydale. And so I'm really unsure which way I'm going to turn on this one. I'd like to hear more debate about it from the other councillors before we vote, really. This delivery of affordable housing is important for Moulton, but at what cost and to whose benefit? I'll leave it there.
Chairman, I think we're almost going beyond planning here, but if we looked at every post-war, inter-war council house that's been built in this country that's now taken over by Yorkshire Housing, the ones that haven't been right to buy, bought, whatever it is, then all of those houses were generally built in estate format. Are we suggesting that all of that is a ghetto in Moulton? I just really don't see this. Are we saying that all of the other development to the east of Rainbow Lane is a ghetto? I really find the term quite bizarre in some respects. I can imagine there are some contexts in big cities where you've got rundown areas, boarded up houses that people can't live in, where you've got ghettos, crime, all of the things that you associate with a ghetto. This is Rydale. You know, it's a nice place to live. And yes, there's a concentration of 50, another 50 together. In an ideal world, we'd have wanted them on the development site, split in two, perhaps. But it hasn't worked out that way. And the developers come forward to us and said, you know, we're conscious about this affordable housing and the viability hasn't stacked up and all this, that and the other. But actually, we've come forward with a scheme which can still deliver 50 affordable houses, combination of flats and family housing. Why on earth wouldn't we think that was a good idea if it's acceptable in all of the planning respects?
Councillor Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, yes, I went on the site visit and I was concerned about the noise from both the A64 and the industrial site. I remember both the Thornton Road application in Pickering. And I also think there was one at Sherburn next to Ward's, and we refused them both. However, I do believe these circumstances are different. You know, it's an established estate where, the industrial estate, where the units are not particularly noisy ones like they were at Ward's or they were at the Thornton Road. So I think we've played that one out, as with the A64. Councillor Burr says we're looking to create a new livestock market. Well, we might be. But I would still have to look at this application on its own merit. It would not sway me just because we'd actually passed the livestock market. I don't know how that relates, but I would have to look at it on its own merit. Regarding Councillor Wainwright's ghetto, I don't think as planners we have an obligation to be social engineers. But it does have an obvious social consequence, the decision we make. And I think, on balance, this is a good decision. However, if it is a ghetto, What I would say is, what an absolutely lovely one. Because again, I went on that site visit, and where the application site is, you go straight down Rainbow Lane into open countryside. So if that's living in a ghetto, I would be very happy to live there. Highways have given no objections, and as far as I could remember, Councillor Andrews makes no mention of linked and duplicated trips in his calculations, so that really didn't sway me very much. Although, yes, I am concerned about the road there, but I think when we get the other developments made, that will come into play. Yes, I love the open green site of the show field. It's lovely. However, with the cemetery there at the back of it, I think we still have some feeling of openness in that situation. It's an infill site, it's close to the proximity to the school and possibly the supermarket. The new road layout will help, and we get a contribution to the schools, and probably I should declare an interest as being a county councillor as well, although I don't think it has much of a bearing on the decision that I want to make, which will be to actually vote with this application. Thank you.
Would you like to second that, Councillor Sanderson? It's not been seconded. Okay. So it's been moved. The recommendation is for approval, subject to completion of the 106 agreement relating to the developer contribution and conditions. That's been moved by Councillor Baer and seconded by Councillor Sanderson. So if you would all like to vote on that now, please. Thank you, that is approved. So we move on to item 6 on your agendas, page 109. When Gary's ready.
Working me hard tonight. Thank you, Chairman. Again, as with all of the applications tonight, we've got a series of updates and some photographs to show members who were unable to visit the site. You'll have seen the additional conditions in the late pages, on pages 22 onwards. And in addition to the conditions listed, there are actually three additional ones. The first one of which is a similar one that from the unfortunately the countryside management officer was on 2 weeks annual leave when we did the agenda, so they're all coming out, which was relating to again a requirement for some mitigation for some bats. There are a couple of the buildings on site had two bat roosts in. It's fairly low risk, but there needs to be some mitigation for that as part of a biodiversity enhancement condition. Natural England, again, as with the other applications, are happy, subject to a condition that sustainable drainage designs and principles are embodied in the reserve matters when they come forward. There's one additional condition, which is something I'd omitted to put on the list, Chairman, which was from your council's building control, building conservation officer. It's been a long evening, Chairman. And I just wishing to highlight those on the plan, which on page 119, if members can see the illustrative layout plan there, if you're looking at the plan as you're facing towards Westgate, one building is on the site of the former council depot, county council depot, and there's three other small buildings on the site of Coronation Farm, which are traditional in nature, stone and pantile buildings, which are required to be retained as part of the scheme. All of the other modern buildings and more slightly more modern, the modern depot buildings, the modern farm buildings are required to be removed as part of the scheme, and I think for the most part residents in the vicinity are actually happy to see the back of the council depot buildings and the other livestock buildings that were on the site, which we'll show you in a moment. The southern half of the site, as members will recall from the site visit, is actually an open sort of undeveloped area between the backs of houses on Town Street, Westfold and the cemetery. So in essence the site's in two parts. You've got sites that have previously been developed as the council depot and the farm, and then the southern half of the site, which is an open paddock area. For the most part, the paddock is actually outside of the designated conservation area. And the reason I wanted to point that out was that you'll have seen from the committee report that English Heritage had raised an objection about the development of that part of the area in principle because of the setting of the conservation area. So for the most part, it's not actually in the conservation area, it's just adjacent to it. That view is not shared by your building conservation officer, who's looked at the application in its entirety and effectively saying, well, there's a heck of a lot of enhancement going on here. And in terms of settings of conservation areas and settings of listed buildings, she's taken the view that the development of that part of the site, taken in the context of the development of the whole, is very much less than substantial harm. And on balance, she feels that the enhancements outweigh the negative aspects of it. Members who are on the site will no doubt have made their own judgments, but we're in a situation where your conservation officer, who's been to the site on more than one occasion, has looked at this very carefully and raises no objection in terms of impact on heritage assets. I'll just quickly move on to the photographs, if I may. And the reason I just put this plan up was to show you with the red line, that's the extent of the full extent of all of the application site. So this is the council depot, or former council depot in this area next to Westfold. There's a little public footpath that comes through here that goes along behind a wall. It's in this area here and hedgerows in this area behind the cemetery. And then this is the, it's mainly a vehicular access, but sort of peters out when you get to the cemetery coming up by the Royal Oak Public House, just in this area here. That's the little slip road. These are smaller cottages on Town Street with Hunter Hall here. The green line is the extent of the conservation area boundary. So you can see, really, apart from the front of the very front of the site on Westgate, all of the depot is outside of the conservation area. Most of Coronation Farm is within it, and then there's a small part of the paddock here and here. I mean, this is there's a little outbuilding on it. I don't know why it was put in the conservation area, but the conservation area boundary, to be honest, doesn't follow a logical boundary at this point. So most of the paddock is outside the conservation area. The hatched area is the bit of the site that's in the conservation area. So this is the view up the private driveway to the side of the Royal Oak Public House, up towards the cemetery in the background. You can just see the edge of the site here. And while I've got this photograph on site, you'll see that there is a small row of lime trees, but they're quite substantial, just on that part of the boundary. And in that area, the tree and landscape officer requires any buildings to be at least 15 metres away from that spread of the trunk it wouldn't have any root damage at that point, but to resist future pressure for felling or lopping or crown lifting. That would result in a minor revision to the layout that you see on page 119, where the first two houses would need to be moved roughly the width of the driveway further away. So this is the corner of the site, and you're looking at the site in the background here. And this is a view across the boundary fencing of the small little square that was within the conservation area, looking across, and in the background you can see the council depot and the bulk of the modern farm buildings that would be demolished on Coronation Farm. This is a view of the site from taken within the church, the cemetery, and you can see in the background some trees on the boundary, and then the paddock with Westfold behind. Okay. And this is a view just panning across, and you can see the farm buildings in the background. This is a view nearer to the boundary, looking through the railings, so you've got Westfold, sort of interwar council housing, I guess, in origin, around a slightly strange sort of banjo arrangement of a road. You can see that on the plan on page 119. And then panning across to the rather unattractive farm buildings on the Coronation Farm site. This is a view from Westgate into the depot, so again the more modern buildings, but a very sort of utilitarian site layout, large areas of hard surfacing. This is the entrance into Coronation Farm, so in essence this is sort of where the estate road will come in this area here. Okay. This is a view glimpsed through the existing cottages on Westgate. So you get glimpses of the more traditional buildings on the back of the site. The traditional buildings are the ones that we're keeping. And this is a view along Westgate. So aside from a house that's shown as facing down the street in this area here, the access road would come in at this point. So these conifers and bits and pieces would be taken out. So that's an example of the buildings that would be demolished on Coronation Farm. And that's more of a close-up view of into the depot site. You can see these sort of porter cabin office buildings that would all be removed. And that's it, Chairman.
We have two speakers on this one. The first speaker is an objector, Mr. Stephen Watson, if you would like to come and take a seat. Mr. Watson. You have 3 minutes, and I'll give you an audible warning after 2.5.
No, why is it won't take that long? I put telly on this morning, BBC, and it said that this had already all gone through, and I'm thinking, this can't be right, because meeting's tonight. And I've turned up here now, I'm rather naive to these things, and it has all happened, hasn't it? It's all, everything's gone through, you know what I mean? I've done some research and things, trying to break the argument down for building, you know what I mean, in Old Moulton. But it's just all gone, you know what I mean? It's just, it's like I'm wasting my time. But I'll say the few things that I found. When I looked at Fitzwilliam, the town planning statement, it said that it was in flood zone 1. And then I went to Environmental Agency, and it says it's in flood zone 1 and 2. So there's a discrepancy there. And then Carl Bummidge from Planning Services, North Yorkshire County Council, he says it's in floodplain too as well, so I don't know, you know what I mean? What you're basing your information on, it's contradicting to start with. And then, it's just gone through, hasn't it, a lot of it. You've said first one, that's gone through, second one's gone through. Anyway, I'm just wasting my time. What more can I say, really, you know what I mean? So there you are, the quickest one you see tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Watson. The agent would like to speak. Mr. Charles Vivian. Yeah? You don't need to speak. Thank you.
Right, okay. Thank you, Chairman. One of the things I neglected to mention, which is in the committee report, actually, was on the matter of drainage. Sorry, I'll offend the gentleman. I meant to update that before anybody spoke. But as with all of the applications tonight, we've actually consulted with the drainage authorities, and that includes Yorkshire Water, the Environment Agency and the local IDB. And members will have noted from the committee report, all of those bodies have seen the submitted flood risk assessments, which follow the National Planning Policy Framework guidance for flood risk assessments. In fact, it's one of the few things that survived the cull of the National Planning Policy Framework burning of the advices. The only thing that really came back out of that was all the advice on flood risk. And I think we've had every site's had a flood risk assessment. This particular one was done fully in accordance with the National Planning Policy Framework advice, and as part of that has sought to demonstrate that as part of the scheme it's providing for attenuation of surface water runoff, which is of particular concern in Old Malton, as members are aware. Now, the report and the conditions highlight the various conditions that the Environment Agency were and have required of us. And to correct the position with regard to the flood risk, there is part of the site that is in flood zone 2. However, the larger part of the site is in flood zone 1. And as part of that flood risk assessment, the implications of developing in those areas have been assessed and dealt with in some detail, I would add. In terms of the conditions that have been recommended to us by the Environment Agency, are actually saying, and I'm just looking for this now again, in terms of the submitted flood risk assessments, which was a detailed report by ARP Associates, made some detailed comments about finished flood levels and flood resilience measures, which was for the dwellings themselves, but in addition was requiring that no development take place until a surface water drainage scheme for the site is also fully worked up. Now, the part of the detail of that condition, as members will see on the late pages, talks about discharge rates being limited and makes reference to the 30% reduction that the MPPF would require, which at the current estimated level would give rise to a level of 56 litres per second per hectare. Clearly, that's very much above agricultural rates that we've already talked about for Eden Camp. However, the scheme also has to satisfy Yorkshire Water or the IDB if we're dealing with a receiving sewer or watercourse. Now, members will have picked up from the report that the IDB had raised some concerns about the rate of runoff. And I have myself this afternoon spoken to Mr. Edwards and also Phil Fisher of the IDB, who some of you probably will know from your contacts elsewhere. And in essence, their concern is obviously because of the recent history of flooding in Old Malton, even after the flood defence installation, because obviously some of the situation is related to floodlocked water. And in essence, what they're saying is, and I'll read you their response, is that examination of the existing underground network needs to be undertaken, preferably by detailed camera survey to establish what happens beneath the ground. But in view of the above, the IDB awaits the results of the detailed underground survey, which we recommend should be added as a condition. So that's part of that same condition, Chairman. So, yes, we're all acutely aware of what has happened in the past in Old Malton. But when I get comments like that from the local internal drainage board, who are local and probably more in the know than some of the Environment Agency officers, I'm reassured as a planner that they're happy to carry on and get that detail agreed. What I can tell you is that the applicants are happy to take on board that further investigation and accept the condition. Little short of that, Chairman, I don't know what more I could say about the issue of flooding. It is sensitive. We all know it's sensitive, and we don't recommend lightly granting planning permission when we think there are issues relating to flood zones and drainage and people adequately getting in and out of their properties in the event of a flood event. So, nothing more to add, Chairman.
Anyone, any questions? Councillor Sanderson.
This is really half a question, half a statement. I'm just so sorry that Mr. Watson feels like he does, because if it has all gone through, then I've just spent many hours reading and scrutinising these reports, writing letters to Gary and stamping my feet, demanding answers, and I'm sure he'll back me up on that. So if it's all gone through, then I've also wasted my time, but perhaps we should ask for assurance from our solicitor, Mr. Winship, just to give us a bit of confidence here. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, the I can assure the committee and members of the public that it hasn't been a waste of time. The committee has to consider these planning applications on their merits and take into account all material considerations and representations. And I think, Madam Chairman, that it's very difficult to predict what the outcome of a planning application will be at a planning committee. So certainly from where I'm sat, the outcome is never a foregone conclusion until the committee have considered all the material considerations. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, thank you, Anthony. Any more questions? Councillor Burton.
I'm hesitating because I'm obviously quite uneasy about this development. I think what I'd like to ask is about the screening, first of all. And would it be possible that if it does get passed tonight, that we could have more screening regarding the cemetery? Because I think it's important in Old Malton that we've obviously looked at, you know, the heritage, etc. And I have actually raised this question with Gary previously because I was concerned about it. When I look at the plans, ideally I would have liked those houses down and away from the cemetery. However, there doesn't look to be much bunding there. So would it be possible, if this is approved tonight, that more screening could be put in place?
Simple answer to that is yes, anything's possible. I mean, in terms of the boundary with the cemetery, I think you're talking about that southern boundary, are you? I mean, in terms of that boundary, it's marked by a railing for the most part. Occasionally there's the odd ancillary building and bench with a shed over it and what have you on the cemetery side. The field side is open at the moment, save for the tree, you know, where you've got the trees and the odd bit of hedgerow, but it isn't what I would call typical field hedgerow at that point. So if members felt that they needed a live screen on that site, for example, if that's what I think you're saying, then there's potentially scope to do that. We'd need to make sure that it worked. In the sense that sometimes we put live screens in gardens and hey presto, 10 minutes later the new occupiers chopped it out again. So that's something we'd need to make sure could happen, bearing in mind that some of the dwellings have got to be physically away from the lime trees anyway. That seems to take a bit of a pressure off in that area. Part of what that's showing, and it is an illustrative layout, is a bit of a turning head where you can play around with planting, provided highways are happy that nothing's encroaching too much. I would have thought this, you know, the reserve, it's a matter that's reserved. So yes, you could, if you wanted to stipulate something or put an informative saying the reserve matter shall provide for, then we can pick that up. It's something that's got some scope, I would have thought.
Thank you. And could you just reiterate, you mentioned briefly about the draining board, they know what's going on quicker than what we do. So could you just reiterate the draining board's position and what they've actually said? And I've just been trying to find about the floodplain. Is it in the floodplain or isn't it? Or is part of it?
Part of it is. Part of the the southern side is in flood zone 2. But over half of the site is in, well over half of the site is in flood zone 1. So did you were at the site visit? I'm not sure if you were, but if you entered the site from the from Westgate, that's sort of like the higher level, and it's a very, very much, you get to the end of that site and then you're into the paddock, and then the paddock heading north to south descends to the southern boundary where it's next to the driveway with the cemetery. So that's the area which is slightly into flood zone 2. So it's a sort of a composite flood zone 1, flood zone 2 site. I mean, as I say, the IDB, who are the on-the-ground people, are effectively saying, well, they'd just like to know where the water's going so we can get to a point where we agree what the attenuated rate is. Not that it's not a a doable solution.
Any more questions? Councillor Arnold.
Yeah, you were talking about boundaries and things. I'm assuming these houses will have a 6-foot fence by the cemetery rather than trees, because at least then do the gardens.
That's what I was just trying to establish, really. Yeah. At the moment, it's mainly identified by... Excuse me while I find the photo. Like this. So you've got gaps in it, and then there's a bit of planting. You can just see to the side there. But it tends to be what I would call cemetery planting. You know, a bit of yew tree. You know, it's not a hedge. And there's clearly a boundary there. But it's not complete. And clearly, I just look at that and think, well, I wouldn't really want to put a 6-foot close boarded fence all the way along there. It'd be a bit suburban, a bit harsh. So I'm sure there's a design solution, but I don't know what it is sitting here tonight. But I think Councillor Burr is suggesting it might be a natural boundary rather than a...
Could I just come back? I mean, for some people, going to a cemetery is a time of reflection, and you don't mind a housing estate, but what you want is you want some privacy or tranquility or something like that, and I just personally am trying to put that in place, please.
Well, it may be one of those odd occasions where what's actually in the cemetery or immediately adjacent to it is evergreen. And you know, I'm not saying Lalandi, for God's sake, I'll be struck out by the RTPI for saying that, but you know, there may be something there that is, you know, of a species that's more appropriate to a cemetery location. I've not had the discussion with the tree and landscape officer, but I'm sure there's something that he could suggest.
I just wanted to say from the chair, as I remember it from the site visit, there was quite a high wall around the cemetery. Was there a 5-foot, 6-foot wall around the cemetery?
Yeah,
any more questions? Councillor Richardson.
Just in interest of moving this forward, does a potential condition need to be seconded? Because I'm happy to do that. It's a local member asking for something that seems quite reasonable. Obviously, if the developer has an issue with it, they will challenge it. So hopefully Gary can pick that up when I come.
What I would say is that because it's outline, and because we're actually only approving so what we are approving actually, I think, is the access. Those are required to be reserved by the reserved matters. So details required by the reserved matters. There is a landscaping scheme, nevertheless, on the planning permission, which could be amended to suggest that there is, or advise that there should be some augmented scheme of planting for the southern boundary with the cemetery, if that's what members wish to do. Just amend the condition.
Any more questions? So we'll move into the debate then. Councillor Bell?
I think probably this is the trickiest one of them all. Are we going to enhance the village and get some affordables? Or are we going to possibly worry about flooding? As the local member, I've been up there in my wellies, and I've been there when it's flooded, and that is my dilemma at the moment. I feel I've been convinced by the reports and by what Gary has told me, and I feel that it will enhance the village, because obviously the depot is not good, the buildings are not good. Some nice houses in Old Malton would be fine. But I would be quite, rather than move it, I would just be quite interested to hear what other members felt about this, because you know, we have got a little dilemma here, and I just think we need to just maybe reflect on that.
Anyone else? Councillor Arnold.
I was just about to write what I was going to say, but never mind. I feel it, then, Hansard Village. I was only down there recently on another matter, and I saw the outside of the depot, and I thought, time something happened to this place. It's untidy. And I do go down to the cemetery because I do a little bit of work for Agars as well, so I do know the cemetery quite well. So I can see where you're coming from about wanting to protect both sides of the people, really, somewhere on the line, residents and the people at the cemetery. But I haven't been down there when it's flooded, so I'm inclined to agree that it's okay, and I'm inclined to approve it.
Councillor Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. Councillor Burr said this was the most difficult of the four applications. For me, it was actually the easiest one, because I did go on the site visit, and I was worried because Old Malton has this sort of special village quality feel to it. It's like a little village. And I think the developer has actually been very sensitive in that he's been really generous with the land round the houses. You know, he hasn't crammed them all in. There was this sort of open space. I know it's only outline, and I would like to see that that was in some way adhered to, that they didn't suddenly get this outline permission and then cram all these houses in, because I think that would impact on the drainage. I know Town Street quite well. It does get quite congested at the bottom end, so that was a bit of a concern. But as long as the openness is kept, then I think there will be plenty of room for overspill parking. I don't like the idea of a fence around the cemetery, but I understand what you mean about privacy when you're probably at a time of grieving. I think maybe just a little bit more informal cemetery planting of yew might just get us over that. But I'm happy with this development. Thank you.
Councillor Woodward.
Thank you, Chair. Coming back to what Lindsay said about at least it is a chance to get some affordable, it's actually 11% affordable, which is closer to zero than closer to the 35% that that is our policy. I'm not going to speak a great deal on this one, Chair. I sort of covered most of it with the last one, but I just want us to bear in mind that having passed the last one, and I assume this one will go through as well, I'm not maybe quite as cynical as the member of the public, but I'm not far off. Moulton and Norton will, by the end of tonight, we've heard, have more than half of the houses passed that it expects in the life of our plan. And they've all been passed without us having a sites document in place, which rather makes a mockery of the government's principles of planning, which are on page 8. Principle 1 being that it should be genuinely plan-led. And that's half of Moulton and Norton's houses without us having a plan where they're going to go. Should be genuinely plan-led, empowering local people to shape their surroundings. Well, like I say, the figures show otherwise. Thank you, Chair.
I'll comment at that point, because it's taken us 7 years to get a plan through the system. So if you can show me anybody who's got a plan-led plan, go and have that discussion at Harrogate, because they haven't even got a core strategy, let alone a sites document. Our frustrations having to work with it every day of trying to get a plan through the system, God, you drive you mad. But actually, we've got a plan that's got a strategy, and it does enable us to make some decisions to resist things. I know it doesn't feel like it sometimes, but at least we're getting the housing in the right places. You might argue about the precise sites, but at least we're getting them in the right places. And in another few months' time, we will have that sites document, and it will take account of some of these decisions because we've made them. But we won't have to make more decisions. So appreciate your frustrations. I've had them in spades.
I'm not knocking you.
Yeah. No, I know who you're knocking. Yeah.
Councillor Sanderson, did you want to come back?
I was just going to echo what Gary said and said, you know, we can't be plan-led if we've messed on for years trying to get the plan done and objected to it all the time. So, yeah, I would support Gary there.
The recommendation for this is on page 117 of your agendas. We haven't had it moved or seconded yet. Would anyone like to move it? Thank you. Is that seconded? I'll second it from the chair and then we can take that to the vote. Sorry, the thing that I haven't said in that is the agreement relating to the developer's contributions and the conditions on your late papers, and also the extra amended landscaping round the...
It's the amendment to the landscape.
The amendment to landscaping round the cemetery. Condition. Yeah. Thank you. Was somebody not? Yeah. Okay. So that is approved. And moving on. Item 7 on your agendas, page 153. Thank you. Would anyone else like a comfort break? Okay. 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Okay.
Right, thank you, everybody. I think we're still one short, but if I start with the photos, bearing in mind Councillor Sanderson's already been to the site, probably be all right. Oh, she's there. Right, okay. Back to the. Okay. Right, thank you, Chairman. Last one tonight. This particular application, as members who went to the site visit will probably have experienced, is a site that's located to the north of Dickens Road properties, accessed off Rainbow Lane. And Rainbow Lane actually forms a continuation of a road past the site and leading down to the Rainbow Equine Veterinary Surgery. And then Rainbow Lane carries on even further than that and eventually proceeds all the way to either crossing over the A64 or coming back down, linking onto Town Street at Old Moulton, some distance away. But it's abutting the A64. At certain points, the A64 is elevated above the site, and that has given, I think, some challenges that we probably were struggling with at one point to resolve in terms of potential for noise nuisance. I think people who stood at the top of Rainbow Lane at the rear of properties on Dickens Road were struck by how noisy it is. And I think in part it's probably just due to the fact that the trunk road, when it was constructed, didn't pay adequate regard, or enough bunding wasn't put in to actually give any form of noise screening at the time. The fact that the road slightly elevated exacerbates the problem, and although Dickens Road is some height above the A64, the noise rises a bit like a natural amphitheatre up the hill. So that's really what you're looking at here. This photograph, in fact, was taken from the opposite side of the road. So if you can see here in the foreground, that's traffic on the A64. And that bridleway that I was talking about previously, which was further along, is just a continuation of that before it comes back to the other bridge that goes over the A64. And in the background, you can see the line of Dickens Road properties. So although they're sort of, I'll call it half a field away from the boundary, because the trunk road sort of cuts across the parcel of land, this is the profile of the existing properties on Dickens Road viewed from that point. I think if you're on the trunk road travelling, it's a light glimpse and it's gone. It's not a site that you get a good panoramic view of. And in fact, the landscape assessors, I think, made the same conclusion, that if you're travelling from the Old Moulton direction, you're just briefly aware of the site and then you're past it. And certainly coming from the York Road direction, you're coming out of a cutting and then suddenly you hit the site and you pass. So you really don't get that view if you're travelling. It's only if you're on the minor bridleway and you're looking across from further distance. This is a view from the bridge just further down. As I was mentioning, this is the bridge that continues off. If you come along Westgate or Rainbow Lane, this is the bridge over the bypass. At that point, you're looking back, and at this point here, this is what I would call the backs of properties in Hawthorne Avenue, Peasey Hills, in that area. So you're on a higher bit of ground. This is Dickens Road, so you can see it's dropping down behind this screening here. So it's actually sort of in a dip in the landscape. It's quite a bizarre bypass, really. It sort of undulates in and out of the surrounding ground levels. At this point, you can see the tops of properties on Dickens Road, which are, in terms of datum level, are significantly above the lower level of the site as it is at the bypass. It's much lower here. This is the view coming back round towards, well, it's actually on Rainbow Lane. This is the continuation of Rainbow Lane, and in the foreground you just see the vet surgery buildings. And Rainbow Lane is then in a cutting in this area here, the overhead lines, which you'll have seen on the plan, crossing the site. So the corner of the site's about here, but at a lower level. And behind, again at higher level, you have the Dickens Road properties. This is a view from Rainbow Lane in a gap in what I'll call the hedgerow. It's sort of like fairly sparse, scrubby stuff on the boundary here, but you can get glimpses of Rainbow Lane, but you're already looking down onto it at that point from the south. And this is where the road would go in. So this is the vehicular access as a continuation of Rainbow Lane. And although there's a crop in the field, you can see that the land's dropping from south to north. And this gives you even more of a view of it dropping. This here is the backs of properties on Dickens Road. So going down through into the field, I took some photographs roughly from the line of where the first house will be, which I'll show you in a moment, but you can see the land's dropping all the way to the boundary, and that's the level of the road, if you can just see it in the background. So it's slightly elevated up. So this scheme actually does provide for some banking and bunding, not of an acoustic nature, but some banking and bunding and landscaping to try and soften that edge. This is down into the field, looking at the complex of the equine centre. So these are sort of got a, what I would call like an agricultural scale to them, these buildings. This is looking back up towards the properties on Dickens Road, and you see there's a mix and match of screenings there, some conifers, some low hedges, some small low fences, some higher ones. And this is just panning round, so you get a feel for how the land's dropping slightly from east to west. This is where, roughly, I'm not going to be precise to a metre one way or the other, roughly where the backs of the nearest dwellings shown on that layout plan on your agenda papers would sit. And you appreciate you're already a full story down. It drops really quickly at this point. And that's what you get an impression of. So this sort of corn sort of this high already at the moment. This is a view, a more distant view, probably the last photo actually, of the site from the cemetery wall. Come back from the cemetery wall. So that footpath we were looking at in Old Moulton, that's how far away it is. And you can see on the skyline the buildings, and in the background, this is Hawthorne Avenue area, which is quite prominent on the skyline. And the other site is behind there. So in terms of landscape impact, it's actually quite sheltered. It was one of the reasons, really, as in terms of choice of site, that this site was chosen rather than the one behind the properties in Hawthorne Avenue, because of its landscape impact. It's lower, not so conspicuous, and actually, in terms of archaeology, a lot less sensitive. So there are a number of reasons why this site was looked at as a preferable site. In terms of the layout that we've ended up with, which again this has been modelled by the acoustic engineers and looked at by our environmental health officers, what we ended up with, instead of what I would call a conventional cul-de-sac layout, we've ended up with a layout which effectively has single aspect flats as part of the mix, which are a combination of two-storey and three-storey units, which then act as a noise barrier and shadow to anything that's beyond it. There is actually some beneficial effect to noise at the rear of properties on Dickens Road as well. So although we've had objections to the development of the field behind the residence in Dickens Road, there actually are some beneficial effects in terms of noise that's perceived at most of the boundaries along that northern edge. With that in mind, we have circulated the suggested planning conditions that we would recommend to you, with the additional ones that I've already mentioned, which are the Natural England condition regarding sustainable drainage principles, that for ecology mitigation proposals need to be implemented as set out in the ecological survey that was submitted, and that the additional environmental health conditions as set out previously to you are applied to this scheme as well as they were to the show field, insofar as they relate to noise levels in gardens and habitable rooms. With that aside, Chairman, I think that's the update.
We have two speakers for this one. The first speaker is an objector, Mr. Nick Greenhow.
Thank you, Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Nick Greenhalsh. I'm an Old Moulton resident. I'd like to say that my objection is not huge on this application, and in fact I welcome the decisions that you've made prior to this. My concern as an Old Moulton resident, as you may well expect, is flooding. I believe that as the four flood risk assessments were grouped together in each one of these applications, you may look at them as being inextricably linked. I think realistically you can rule out the Pasture Lane one, but from the point of view of residents in Old Malton, I think the Eden Road, the Coronation Farm and the Rainbow Lane ones are linked. My concern is on this flood risk assessment, I do not feel that it is robust enough. The original application had an incorrect site plan attached to it, and the second updated one has two soakaway tests. One of these soakaway tests is actually on the field adjacent to Rainbow Lane, so there is only one representative soakaway test. While this proves that a sustainable drainage system can be obtained on this site, my concern is the test bores for the borehole do not go down to a level, potentially to an impermeable layer, and I'm worried that there may be movement of moisture from a permeable layer down to an impermeable layer, which then will eventually find its way into the drainage system, which runs parallel to Rainbow Lane and Westgate, and ultimately finds its way into Old Malton. I welcome the last statement by Gary Housden to say that the Internal Drainage Board recommendations for Coronation Farm will be taken on board, and I'm sure that some of the Old Malton residents who left after the first meeting will be pleased, particularly if it resolves our surface water flooding issues. I've further been advised by Gary Housden that a Section 106 agreement cannot be used to mitigate existing problems in the area, and by this I mean specifically a permanent pump in Old Malton to address the surface water flooding issues. This is a shame, and if there is any flexibility in this, I would ask members to press for a proportion of the developer's contribution for the overall four sites to be earmarked for this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the agent, Mr. Paul Brailsford, he's also down to speak. Did you want to speak, Mr. Brailsford? No. Okay.
Chairman, just to pick up on the point of the adjacent parcel and the borehole, I think the flood risk was done at the time when it wasn't decided which site was going to be the goer, as it were. So it wasn't a deliberate attempt to dig a flood hole on the wrong site. It was I think somebody commissioned to do a flood risk assessment, and that's why it was what it was. I mean clearly, how many times can we talk about drainage in one evening? But clearly, the issue with this site is particularly, if members are looking at page 164 in front of them, that actually the amount of site that's actually been put to developable use is actually quite small. The capacity for this particular scheme to wash its own face in terms of sustainable drainage is probably higher than I've ever seen on any development site that we've dealt with in the 12 years I've been here. So I'm pretty confident that it can deliver on what the Environment Agency have conditioned. Nevertheless, they are still requiring the detail of the surface water drainage scheme, so the condition is there to pick that up in terms of surface water runoff and the like. And we have also still got the Natural England sustainable drainage principles that are going to need to be taken forward in any reserve matters. So, sometimes, we give you advice and we sit here uncomfortably with what the Yorkshire Water or the Environment Agency are saying because they're the experts, but I actually look at this one and think, well, yeah, this one can really clearly work, and we just need to make sure we deliver it.
Any questions? Councillor Wainwright.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It seems to me that we've been foisted by our own petard, because if we refuse this application, we're not going to get any affordable housing from the two developments that we've just passed. Would that be a correct?
No, there are four on Old Malton, but that started off as zero, so I wish Mr. Woodward would appreciate the efforts of his officers. Yes, I mean, clearly the bulk of the affordable housing has been proposed on this site, and clearly, we've done our level best to try and deliver affordable housing at what is the focus for growth for the district. You know, it's an attempt to try and deliver on that aim. It's not on site, as we've said earlier, it's not our preferred option, but it is a proposal which we think is a sensible one and should, on the basis of what we've now got before us, illustrative that it is, give a quality scheme.
And then my second question is, how can it be legally binding when one developer, Broad Acres, are producing affordable homes and another developer is producing the homes for sale?
Well, I'm not a solicitor, Chairman, but I'm looking at one who will be involved in the brokering of that agreement, and it's a question of probably better minds than I've got in terms of delivering on the enforceability of a legal agreement. But clearly we've got a situation here where this scheme, which is a 100% scheme, is required to is you've got an active partner with a registered social landlord who's keen to get on and do it. I feel pretty confident. I mean, if this was just here's an affordable housing scheme, we haven't spoken to any of registered social landlords who hadn't written to us and confirmed that they're up for it, I'd be really worried.
Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I think the objector had quite valid reasons to point out to us that obviously a mistake had been made, etc. And can I just have it reiterated by Gary that obviously the conditions are for the flooding, because we're all mindful about the flooding in Old Moulton. I think that's been well reiterated tonight. So anything that we can do to make sure that we mitigate this, it's really important.
Give you the conditions, it's just the start of the work for us. You know, if we get a planning permission which's got 30 conditions on it, the work really starts then. And you wouldn't believe the stuff that we get to discharge, roads, drainage, landscaping. You don't need to know about all that really, but that's really what makes things happen. And they're usually reserved to a condition.
Thank
it's
you.
Only when we know we can't do it that it becomes a problem.
Thank you. And residents on the Dickens Road, the estate, they're very, very concerned about the bunding. So is that definitely conditioned that we've got? I mean, it looks very pretty, but, you know, it's outline. Can we make sure that to satisfy the people on Dickens Road about the bunding?
My take of the main concern was one of principle. I think most residents on Dickens Road just didn't want the houses behind them, and from a very human point of view, you can understand that, I suppose. But in terms of the other thing, which was really about the proximity of the dwellings to each other, you've got some pretty big distances as being shown on this illustrative plan, but you've then got open spaces and landscaping in between. To be honest with you, I'm not a great fan of bunding, having had to promote it all night to make sites quieter. But actually, because of the natural change in levels here, the levels are working for residents in Dickens Road as well, so they're already dropping away almost a story before you get into where the development is. I mean, there may well be some material that needs to be used, but equally there's going to be material used in the landscaped bank next to the road, but I don't really want it to look like the north face of the Eiger either, which is that sort of judgment call.
Well, I think we can work towards something, can't we, for everybody. And the last question is about the traffic noise. Obviously, the residents on the Dickens estate, but for the residents who are actually going to live here. You know, we have to consider these people who are going to live here. So I want to make sure that obviously anything to reduce that traffic noise, because it's like a drone, you know, when you stand there and listen to it. So we've got to make sure. So is that conditioned or?
Yes, sorry, I raised that. These were the extra things that were quite literally being distilled by your environmental health officers Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week with the detailed work that had come into us.
I just wanted to double check.
Around this scheme, and actually this scheme, because of the nature of it and the orientation of the barrier that is the flats, results in a good standard of noise for living rooms, back gardens, bedrooms, at facades and at, in gardens in the day and at bedrooms at night. So it's reached that good standard and still in a situation where windows should be capable of being opened.
Councillor Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. This is just to pick up on a point that Mr. Greenhouse made. With regard to the 106 agreement, and he said it cannot be used to address an existing problem. Now, we've been debating all night contributions towards Brambling Fields and how we might address the problems that are in the middle of Moulton. How does that tally in relation to that? Can you just give us some clarification surely that's an existing problem.
The rationale for that and the supplementary planning guidance that goes back to when we first dreamed it up, which came as a result of an industrial scheme in Norton, actually, which started it all off, whereby traffic was causing an additional problem at Butcher Corner that on the face of it couldn't be mitigated unless something happened to Butcher Corner. So it was the traffic from the scheme that required the contribution to be made to the solution, which was Brambling Fields, to take the traffic out of the junction so it could buy the capacity to use it. That sounds a bit bizarre, but that's how it worked. So it actually was trying to address its own problems that it was creating, which was more traffic going through a congested junction that's got an air quality problem. Sorry. Did I lose you somewhere there on the way?
You didn't lose me. I just think that there's always been a problem there at Butch Corners for many, many years. But
I'm not doubting that there aren't situations where around Moulton and Norton a permanent pump would be brilliant. As a result of other residential developments, it was at Prior Potbeck. The scheme there from Redrow at the time, sure it was Redrow, required a solution to the flooding problem at Prior Potbeck. So it was peculiar to that development. But Millbeck, which also has a pump, was not developer funded. It was dealt with by the Environment Agency. I'm pretty certain about that. There was no developer funding to deal with Millbeck. Councillor Burr would probably know more than I do, but that was in and done before I got here. But it wasn't as a result of a developer funding. It was a result of an authority saying, yes, there's a problem that we need to fix, which is a slightly different question.
Any more questions?
Is anticipated that all the properties, 50 properties, will be for rent or will some part ownership?
The current Schlar is suggesting a 90%, 10% split, but I think the detail of that negotiation is still to be had.
Any more questions? Then we move into debate. Councillor Burt.
Oh, it's been a long night, but we're getting there. We're desperate for affordables and really pleased that we're going to be able to accommodate, I think it's around about 50 units. It's been a long night, you know, a lot of deliberation has taken place and we've asked a lot of questions of our officers, and I hope, you know, that we feel as though we've really, really asked the questions of our residents and got the answers. It's the last link in this chain to secure affordables, create new homes and to create a new livestock market, and I have pleasure in moving this approval.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Oh. Councillor Woodward.
Well, I'll be supporting this one, Chair, but I'd just like to put on public record that, in my opinion, there aren't enough affordable and they shouldn't all be in one place. And while I maybe wouldn't have gone as far as Councillor Wainwright and described it as a ghetto, I agree 100% with the Fitzwilliam Moulton estate, who in their little flyer for another application that's going to come eventually describe, as Gary referred to earlier, pepper potting affordable houses through the development,
will avoid social division. And that's exactly what this is. It's social division when you put...
Do you realise they'll have to pepper pot 170 affordable houses in that development?
Well, no, I'm quite aware. I'm quite aware, Gary. But I agree with Councillor Wainwright that putting all the affordable in one place, while maybe not being a ghetto, is social division. You are saying to the people that can't afford a market house, that's where you're going to live. You're going to live separately from the people that can afford a market house, and that's disgraceful, Chair.
It is a dilemma, and we've come across it, not day in, day out, because we don't get that many estate-scale housing schemes in Rydale, but I've worked in areas before where, you know, there was 700 or 800 houses at a time. And pepper potting on that scale is sort of 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, and you end up with the same sort of feeling of an enclave. But actually, you know, I've come across registered social providers, or RSLs as they're now called, and they've wanted it because they can manage it better. And you think, oh God, you know, you go one way with one housing association, one way and another. I take your point, you know. There's a particular set of circumstances here that we've wrestled with, and it hasn't been easy.
Anyone else? Councillor Richardson.
I'd just like to second Councillor Woodward's comments. For me, it's not about everyone being in the same estate in affordable housing. It's the fact that there's a section of Malta now with only six affordable houses, and the other ones, unless you can afford it, you can't live there. I just find that unacceptable. So I hope this isn't a precedent we're setting here. I'm obviously behind any affordable housing we can get. This is the best offer, unfortunately, we've got. So I'll be voting for it.
Can I just say something from the chair? I really don't think we should stigmatise people who rent a house. And to me, what's been said tonight, it's a ghetto, and it's because you can't afford a house, you've got to live there. There are a lot of people out there that can't afford to get on the housing ladder. And I think what we're providing here is good housing for people that can't afford to get on the housing ladder at this time. That isn't to say that they won't move on to buy their own house at some time later. So I really don't see that providing good social housing for people that can't afford to get on the housing ladder at this time is a bad thing. So
Can I just come back, Chair, because I don't think anyone who's commented on them all being put in one place has stigmatised the people that are going to live in those houses, or has said that providing social housing is a bad thing. It's the putting people who cannot afford a market house all together in one place that I gather us three, the three councillors here that have mentioned it, don't see as something that we should be doing, don't see it as something that's desirable. Of course it's desirable to supply houses, social housing, but it shouldn't be all in one place.
Okay. Well, it's recommended for approval. It's been moved by Councillor Burr and seconded by Councillor Arnold. So can we take the vote on this now, please? That is approved. There's no other business, so I'll declare this meeting closed. Thank you all for coming. That's not too bad. I said 9 o'clock and it's only 20 past 6.